Meeting, the regular meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board for May 7th, 2015. Welcome, everyone. So again, I wanted to welcome everyone here to the May 7th Morro Bay Harbor Advisory Board meeting. Welcome. Thank you for attending. And I can see here we have a quorum. And I wanted to also discuss moving up item number D2 to right after the Coast Guard Auxiliary presentation, because there's probably a lot of people here in the room for that item agenda, and so we can do that before we discuss D1. Do I hear any comments here from the board? Do I need to make a motion, Eric? Okay. So what we're going to do here, folks, is we're going to move up D2 just right after the presentation by the Coast Guard Auxiliary. So you'll have a little bit of things that we'll discuss here before then, and then we'll go right into the fees and stuff like that we want to discuss. Okay, right now I want to have a moment of silence. And then a Pledge of Allegiance. You can stand. Okay, at this point in time, we would like to have any type of announcements by the board members here. Gene, I'll start with you. Alan?
None.
Lynn?
Negative.
I don't really have anything right now. Dana?
Yes, I would like to announce that this Saturday from 9 to 1, at the Morro Bay Yacht Club, we'll be having a fundraiser for the Morro Bay Youth Sailing Foundation, and it's a marine swap meet. So if anybody would like to have a spot there, we have lots of spots available still. And they also do a bake sale, and it's just an annual event that we do. So come on down, 9 to 1. That's it? Yeah, buy stuff.
Ron? Okay. At this time, is there anyone in the audience that would like to have public comment that's not related to any of the items that we're going to discuss tonight? Hearing none of that, we want to move on here. So we want to see the approval of the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting April 2nd, 2015. Has everyone had a chance to look at that? And is there any corrections, additions, or deletions? Do I hear a motion? Oh, I'm sorry, Lynn.
I have a clarification where it says in the first paragraph, Ms. Meissen welcomed boaters to join the Morro Bay Yacht Club races. She said the Harbor Patrol placed the race marker where the old 18EB buoy used to be located. It is a 55-gallon drum. That implies that it's steel. It is not. It's plastic. In case you ran into it, it won't do quite so much damage. Hopefully.
Thank you, Lynn.
Good to know.
Any other comments? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes? I hear a second.
Second.
Okay, I have a first and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye. All opposed? Okay, Now we're going to go to public hearings, reports, and appearances. At this point in time, I'd like to have the Harbor Department status report, please, Eric.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and welcome back for another month. I'll try to move through this quickly. We've got a lot of things on the agenda tonight, and I think we're going to have a fair amount of public comment. So dredging, something that's pretty important. Coming here this month, the dredgeship Yaquina. My staff report says May 20th. That's changed. The dredgeship had a little trouble getting into dry dock, and it's delayed. It's looking like about the 22nd. It'll be here for its usual, quote-unquote, 20 days of dredging. Cost about $3 million to get that accomplished. They will be concentrating mainly on the entrance. I know we've got a couple of high spots. I found one the other day over off Tideland's dock that I think a lot of people are aware of. But until we can get the whole harbor dredged with a little bit more money, we'll just be seeing mainly the entrance and the groin area off of channel marker number 6, between 4 and 6 there, that spot that gets skinny. We are lobbying Congress to try and get some additional funding and Corps of Engineers. There's word on the street that even though the President's budget is out and for next fiscal year only includes about $3 million, to which we'll get the Yaquina here again, there's a chance that Corps of Engineers may get a plus-up in funding. And in that case, we're hoping to get some additional funding out to the L.A. District, and with luck, that'll translate into some full harbor dredging for us in 2015-2016. On the back of your status report, there's a letter that the mayor sent to Brigadier General Toy of the Army Corps of Engineers. He's the commanding general of the South Pacific Division, which is the division that covers all of the western United States and the warmer climes of the South Pacific. So we'll see what comes of that. Lifeguard season is coming up pretty quick. We're going to get the lifeguard towers out next week. Lifeguard Academy, we ran it this year after 2 weeks of after 2 years of not running it because we didn't need to over the last couple of years. This year we needed more guards, as did Cayucas. So 2 weekends in April, that took place. Everybody graduated, have some good new hires, so you'll see some new faces on the beach. Towers are going to be going out, like I say, next week, and then Memorial Day weekend we'll staff for weekends only in about first or second week in June, depending on when all the schools get out, is when we go to full 7 day a week staffing. So look for that again. Fishing seasons, recreational rockfish and salmon season open the same time this year on April 1st. From what I hear, salmon's a little slow. Recreational rockfish is about the same as it normally is. Some days are great, some days not. I hear there are a few more salmon being caught out front, so hopefully our local commercial folks will be able to get out. Their season opened on May 1st, but when I wrote this staff report a week or so ago, it was still fairly slow. April 1st meeting of the Friends of the Harbor Department netted some new signups, and we focused, I think, on some to-do tasks, and we got some good volunteerism out of that, so that effort is up and running. Recent city council actions on April 14th, the City Council approved Amendment 5 to the lease for Bob Fowler's Morrow Bay Landing, which is the ex-Verges sport fishing landing, restructuring the lease terms and development requirements, and adding 10 years to the lease due to additional construction and other costs and some restructuring of the lease. And the requirements in it, one of them was the current Tognazzini's 3, where the old fish market was, the old Thai restaurant was, and in the land portion of his lease redevelopment, that restaurant goes away, that use goes away, it moves into a new restaurant in the old building site. It'll be a two-story building. There's a pocket park slated for that area. One of the amendments to this lease was the allowance that the Harbor Department, if needed, may be able to use that space for a restroom if the Coast Guard project moves forward and they build their new building, their new additional building. We've got the option to possibly use that pocket park area for either restroom and or shower facilities if we can fit them in there. So that was part of the genesis of that lease amendment. Also at the April 14th meeting, the City Council authorized the Harbor Director, that'd be me, to negotiate with the DeGaramores at lease site 102W. That's the site that is mostly water in front of Giovanni's Fish Market. It does have a piece of the building. It's a sort of a strange lease site. It doesn't end right at the top of the revetment. It's back on the land a little ways. So we'll be getting with the DeGaramore family and starting to negotiate with those folks here over the next year or so. That lease expires in 2018. At the April 28th meeting, Council authorized staff to start working directly with the Central Coast Aquarium, which are the folks down in Avila, to start working on a collaborative basis to establish a new aquarium and marine sciences and education facility here in Morro Bay sometime after 2018, after the existing aquarium lease expires. It's a work in progress with Cal Poly and the aquarium folks. I think NEP were maybe involved as well. And the new space envisions having an aquarium, first floor aquarium, some dock space for Cal Poly's boats, marine laboratory, visitor serving spaces, and some event spaces. So we'll see where that plays out over the next few months. We're hoping by the end of the year to have some sort of an MOU or a cooperative agreement with the aquarium in place to see about a public-private partnership to get that site redeveloped. Recent events, Easter celebration at the Rock, as usual, pretty much packed the parking lot. The folks that put that on, all the parishes, are pretty well at organizing the parking and keeping it flowing pretty well. But there's religious services and music and family fun, sort of a non-denominational, all different folks event there, and that went pretty well. April 12th, Blessing of the Fleet, started at the North T Pier. We had a couple of our boats transporting some of the Padres around, pastors, for the blessing. Again, good turnout for that. Always a welcome event in the springtime. Emergency vehicle car show, or emergency vehicle show, occurred weekend of April 17th to 19th. We participated again this year. We actually won two awards. First place for the best public relations vehicle, which was our lifeguard truck. And we got third place for best specialty emergency vehicle, which was our one of our jet skis that we had in tow. So kudos to Becca Kelly, my patrol supervisor. She's the one that really spearheaded that event. I believe the Friends were there as well in attendance, recruiting as well. Weekend of April 25th, 26th was the Kite Festival and Carnival. Saturday was a little gloomy, windy, and wet, although I don't think it completely shut the event down, but a fair number of people out. But once it cleared, the attendance seemed pretty good and had a nice wind, and then Sunday was pretty much an all-time kiting day. Not too high a wind, sunny, warm. They had the carnival event going there, and from all accounts, that was a great, well-attended event. Department of Training, Department Training, April 14th. I'm trying to go too fast. Harvard and fire departments participate in ocean rescue training drill in Montana de Oro. We generally do that every year in conjunction with CHP with their helicopters so that we can get some practice and some experience working around helicopters hovering not very far above your head. Everything went well. It requalified the helicopter pilots to do picks out of the ocean, which is a unique thing that they don't do very often. And by all accounts, well-attended event and got some good training out of that. April 2022, Becca Kelly, Patrol Supervisor, and Lori Stiltz attended the California Boating Safety Officers Association annual training conference in Monterey. This conference focused on different things, different times of the year, but this one was real boating safety enforcement and some new boating safety enforcement things that are coming out over the next few years. April 23rd, my patrol officers Dana Stein and Nate Dipmore attended 8-hour Hazwoper recertification training, which is basically their hazardous materials response training that gets them to a level higher than just showing up and knowing what to do. It gives them some containment and cleanup authority, so it's a good feather to have in our cap to be able to respond to those incidents, because we do have them, unfortunately, on a probably two little more often than I'd like basis. And then upcoming events, May 16th, right around the corner at the Yacht Club in conjunction with National Safe Boating Week, and I think you'll hear this from the Coast Guard Auxiliary here in a minute. We're having a safe boating expo. It includes vessel safety checks by the Coast Guard Auxiliary, displays, our Harbor Patrol vessel will be there, barbecue, courtesy of the Friends of the Harbor Department, and proceeds to that going to the Friends. Did I get that right, Dana?
Yeah.
Okay. And admission is free. All right. And that, unless there's any questions, concludes my report.
Thank you, Eric. Do you have any discussions? Any comments?
One comment that I'm the Pocket Park for Tognazzini's 3 site, where is that? I mean, I don't quite understand that.
So if you start at our office and then start working your way south, you've got the public restroom, a little open space, Tognazzini's main restaurant, little gap, the next building, Tognazzini's 3.
Right.
That is a little individual lease site there that extends through the streetway and to the water lease site. It's a little landlocked lease site, and I don't know the number, but in Fowler's plans, what Tognazzini's 3 is in now goes away, so that site south of Tognazzini's main restaurant gets leveled and gets turned into a pocket park. Then the restaurant use gets reestablished in his new building, which will go where the existing old Red Verges building is now. That goes away, too, and gets completely redeveloped in a nice new two-story building.
Okay. Gene?
Yeah, the reason for eliminating what is now Dockside 3 is we're going to change the radius of that driveway around there to make it easier for the fish trucks to haul out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other comments? Okay, Eric, I thank you very much. Eric, would you introduce your guest here?
Yes, I would. Item B2. We have Dave Smith, the commander of the Coast Guard Auxiliary's Coast Guard Auxiliary 761, Commander Dave Smith. He's providing a presentation on the role of auxiliary and the auxiliary's number one mission, which obviously the Coast Guard's number one mission in Fall State Auxiliary is recreational and other boating safety. And Dave can probably speak to the Boating Safety Expo that's going to occur on the 16th as well and other things that the Coast Guard Auxiliary is here for and what they can do for you and what we can do for them.
Yep.
Take it away, Dave.
Thank you, Eric. First of all, let me thank everyone for allowing me the opportunity to come here and spend a little time reviewing the Coast Guard Auxiliary, but specifically what the Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla 761, which is our community flotilla representation for the auxiliary here in Morro Bay, which is what I'm connected to and most excited about. But real quick, while we're still on, I was just going to say, well, you don't have to pull it back up. In addition to, I just got word, Sheriff Department called, and they are going to bring their boat over. In addition to the Harbor Department having their boat, the Coast Guard 47 rollover boat is going to be there with tours from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. The sheriff is going to be there all day. The harbor is going to be there all day or as much as you can get. We appreciate it. I'll have a booth there representing the auxiliary. We'll be signing people up for vessel exams. We'll be handing out all sorts of goodies for boaters and anything you want to know about Flotilla 761 and what we have to offer the community and how we're participating. We'll be there to discuss, and we're looking forward to it. It's our first ever. I'm excited, and I think it's going to be a great event, so we're looking forward to that. First, I want to start with a brief overview of what the Coast Guard Auxiliary is about, and I'm going to kind of whiz through this because I really want to speak to you and make you folks aware of specifically our flotilla here. The Coast Guard Auxiliary is basically the volunteer arm of the Coast Guard. We do and participate with the Coast Guard side by side in search and rescues. We do maneuvers. We do patrols. We assist the Coast Guard in every way possible. Probably the best way to think about us is we do just about everything the Coast Guard does with the exception of police power. Now, we do not have police power. So if we're out there on a patrol and we find something of suspicious nature, we radio that into the Coast Guard, and they handle that from there. But as far as doing side-by-side towing, search and rescues, verifying all the AtoNs, PAToNs that we have off the coast here, which are those aids to navigation that are so vital to boaters out there, we're the ones that maintain and take care of those. So the Coast Guard is auxiliary is made up of approximately 30,000-plus members. It is the largest marine safety volunteer. We are all volunteers organization in the country supporting the U.S. Coast Guard. Classroom instruction. Now, this is probably my largest emphasis with this flotilla, and that is classroom education. I'm confirmed my first class that's going to be made available, and you'll see the flyers around town. For my first course, which will be the ABS course, which is about boating safety. It's a one-day, eight-hour course that I'll be putting on. Hopefully I'll have some other public educators with me to assist me. But that's about boating safety. Then from there, we want to ramp it up, or I do, and bring on, like, the following month, boating skills and seamanship, which is a much more extensive course. Sailing skills and seamanship, which is specific to sailors. Weekend navigator, we have a navigation course. Suddenly in Command is a great four-hour course that is designed for anyone that's crewing on a boat with someone, a skipper, and God forbid anything happens to that person, what do you do? Hence the term, suddenly you're in command. Now, that's what this course addresses. It makes you aware of certain necessary and vital tasks that you must perform. Know how to work your radio. Know how to get that boat back. Know how to get a hold of the Coast Guard. All those important things, where your life vests are, where all the safety equipment is on the boat. It's a great course. So we'll be doing that in the future here, too. Recreational boating safety, again, that is mission one with the Coast Guard Auxiliary. That's really what we're about, mainly, and that includes vessel safety checks. Once a month, the first Saturday of the month, we're at the ramp, not necessarily me, but my staff officer, flotilla staff officer for vessel exams, Charlie Cohen, and then I have three new vessel exam officers that are coming on board within my flotilla, and they'll be out there. And I'll be out there on occasion, too, doing vessel checks as I'm a vessel examiner, too. They're all voluntary, so we don't press anybody to do this, but I'll tell you, 15 minutes worth of vessel check could save your life. It's well worth the time invested. Plus, you get a nice little sticker. You put it on your boat, and you know, if you're out there and the Coast Guard sees you, they know you've been inspected and that you have all the proper and up-to-date required Coast Guard equipment, safety equipment on your boat. It's done at the marina or at the launch ramp, and it's obviously to aid the Coast Guard. They also do them, but we by far carry the bulk of that. Again, it's designed to help ensure boater safety. On water patrol, now this is where I mentioned non-martial duties. We don't have police powers, but we do check the AtoNs. We do, some of our more experienced and qualified members do go out and work side by side with the Coast Guard and in some cases on some of the Coast Guard vessels if they're qualified. Collateral mission support, this is working within the station. I'm sure most of you know about our station here, Morro Bay. And we do have auxiliarists that give up their time to do radio watches, commissary program. That's something we've come up with, which is fairly new to the auxiliary. And basically just handling jobs to free the Coast Guard personnel at the station so that they can perform the more vital functions of rescuing and making sure that everyone is safe out there. Fellowship. Regular meetings, I just want to say our meetings are held over on Kennedy at the Recreation Center. It's the first Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. And from 6 to 6:30, I have a pizza fellowship gathering, and then the meeting starts at 6:30 and goes till 8. All of you are welcome at any time, and I've seen one of these gentlemen that came in, but unfortunately you weren't able to stay that night, Ron, so... you're all welcome to come out and be a guest at one of the meetings. We'd love to see you. Special events, well, that goes to the Safe Boating Expo. This is the first event that I've been able to organize, and we're going to have many more throughout the year specific to our community. And then basically, yeah, it's the best unpaid job there is. I retired just a year ago. I've been in the Coast Guard Auxiliary 13 years, so even while I was working, I was active. But the past year, even though I'm retired, I can tell you I've never been busier in my life. But it's a great feeling to know that it's a worthy cause. So again, I've got information on the back desk. Please, if you have any questions, anything, contact me. That's my contact information. And that's the end of that one. But now, just quickly, too, as far as a Flotilla Morro Bay, it's made up of approximately 20 members. These are all volunteers. These are probably the most fantastic people you'd ever want to meet. They really give of their time. They study hard to excel at the disciplines within the Coast Guard Auxiliary to help you, the boating community, and Morro Bay. So some of the things, as I mentioned, the public education classes, vessel safety checks, operations with the Coast Guard, marine environmental protection. We are partnering with the Morro Bay Estuary Program. A lady by the name of Rachel Pass has spoken several times at our meetings now. We're really excited about that. My goal, my objective as commander with this flotilla is to make contact with the community. A lot of people think of the auxiliary, like the Coast Guard. We are under the Department of Homeland Security, but we are Flotilla 761 Morro Bay. We are here for you, and that's what I want to get across by doing various things like social media. We're working on a Facebook site and a web page. That's going to be up and running pretty soon. So you can go on there. I'll have a commander's corner. You'll be able to see what we're doing and what we're working on. And then all the print media, the publications. I've got articles ready to go. The radio, TV, we're looking for public service announcements that we can make. Events, again, like the boating safety. And just like this, speaking at local community organizations. I'm always available if any of you would like me to come in and give a brief talk about the Coast Guard Auxiliary and what we have to offer the community. I'm ready, willing, and able, and would love to do that. So I know you got a busy night. I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but I do want to thank you again and just leave you with this. Please wear your life vest and boat safely out there. So does anybody have any questions at this point?
Gene?
No.
Alan?
No.
Lynn? Neil?
Yeah. Sure. When do you do the inspections at the launch ramp?
Don't quote me, I'm almost positive. It's the first Saturday of every month. And actually, if you go out to the launch ramp, there's a permanent sign posted there that gives the time and date, and we'll have someone there. So you just pull up in your boat, or if you really want to make sure, call me.
Okay.
And if you can't make it on that first Saturday, call me and say, Dave, you know, can you come out on Sunday or whatever? We'll make accommodations.
What's your phone number again?
My phone number is area code 805-300-1058. And that's my cell phone number. So, again, thank you all. I really appreciate this.
Hold on one second.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Ron?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Commander, if there is someone interested in the auxiliary,
mm-hmm.
and they're interested in what training programs or classes are available to auxiliary members, is there a listing somewhere that they can look at?
Thank you, Ron, because I failed to mention this. That's kind of a two-parter. One is, I have to put in a plug, anybody that is interested in volunteering for the Coast Guard Auxiliary, we are always looking for qualified individuals. So please see me. I'm the recruiter. I'm kind of the one-man show at the moment, but I've got a great staff that's going to help me out with all this. So if you're interested in that, contact me. As far as the programs that are available, are you speaking of the classes? Because that I think I covered.
No, not so much the training that's available to the public from the auxiliary, but mm-hmm. the training that is available to auxiliary members.
Oh, thank you. Okay, yes. That's the great thing about the auxiliary, and again, 13 years with it. A lot of people think auxiliary, they think, okay, I've got to have a boat, I'm going to be out in the water. Not at all true. I happen to have a boat, and when I first started, I spent a lot of time on patrols, becoming crew qualified, and all of that. My last half of my term with the auxiliary has strictly been administrative, public education, vessel safety exams, management, and you know, working my way into a position of a commander and being in a leadership position. So with that, I can tell you that if you are interested in the Coast Guard Auxiliary, whatever background you have, you know, from your personal life and career, there is an avenue for you to pursue that, whether it be public education or whatever. There's a plethora of avenues that you can get involved in. Too many to go into right now, but I can assure you, you don't have to have a boat. You don't ever have to go out on the water. You can join the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and you can make a difference. So keep that in mind, but if any of you are interested, don't hesitate to give me a call. I'll be happy to discuss it with you. I think that's my ride.
Hey, Dave, I wanted to thank you very much. It was a pleasure and very informative.
Thank you, Bill. All right.
We'll see you on the 16th, too, Dave.
Yes, please do. All right, thanks.
Okay. So what we want to do here is we want to bring the D2 item agenda up right now. And I think what we want to do, I see a lot of people here, and I know that there's a lot of people here speaking on the fees that the city charges for the slips. That's really not what we're here for tonight. What we're here for tonight is to talk about the concept of cost recovery. And I'd like to kind of stick to that in one sense, or at least that's what I'm attempting to get the direction from the harbor director and the city manager here. But with that, and we'll have 3 minutes to discuss anything on this particular topic. Eric, do you want to say something, or does Dave want to say something on what the intent of the city is here?
Well, if you're ready for me to launch into my staff report, I want to just go.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and I'm going to let Dave Buckingham, city manager, kind of lead into how we got here and what we're doing in a general sense in the city, and then he'll hand it back off to me, and then we'll get into specifics on the harbor stuff, and I can retouch on that and a few other things.
Great, thanks. It's nice to be here with you tonight, and thank you all for the work that you do. I rely heavily on Eric, and I know he relies on you, and the context that you bring to everything that that happens down the harbor, whether it's yachts or commercial fishing, or I spent 20 minutes or 30 minutes with Neil this week looking at his oyster operation. It's wonderful what is going on down our harbor. So I heard from my colleague Andrea, from Jeremiah, from Eric, that there was a little bit of excitement about the city's look at fee subsidies that started at a council meeting, two council meetings ago. So I really didn't want to come at all. I thought I'd just let Eric deal with this, but I thought it would be appropriate if I came down and lent a little bit of a city perspective. So I understand that, so to back up a little bit, at the council meeting 2 meetings ago, we started into a process for the council to consider what the appropriate subsidy level is for various services in the city. I'm going to back up in a second, but looking sort of first at the harbor and thinking about the harbor, there's fees that we have for various services in the harbor, whether it's liveaboard fees, sailboat mooring, towing services, sport fishing, launch ramp, and of course commercial fishing. So there's a variety of services that we provide in the harbor. Each of those comes with a specific fee that's set annually in our master fee schedule. And I wrote in that staff report, and I would continue to state that staff is generally recommends that harbor fees are not subsidized. And I say generally, but then the next thing we said is, but we really want you, the HAB, to look at this because you've got look at it in particular with respect to commercial fishing, because you've got the most taste and feel with what's going on in our harbor, and we thought it wisest to turn this over to you for one or two or three meetings, however long it takes, to consider this. So let me back up for a second just into the concept, and I know that there are folks who don't like the term subsidy. I'm frankly one of them. I don't like subsidies. I don't like subsidies because I don't like taxes. And what a subsidy generally is when we tax everybody to provide a single service that benefits either a large group or a smaller group. So I went to I was in a meeting about 2 months ago, and the question came up, was asked to a large group of city manager kind of people, how do you improve revenues in a city without increasing taxes? I thought, oh, this is good, because I don't want taxes to go up. So I started taking notes, and they gave two quick examples. One way for a city to improve its revenues without increasing taxes is to actually collect the taxes that are already on your books. So if you have a tax for a certain thing, make sure that you're collecting those taxes. The other is to look at your fees and how much it costs you to provide a specific service, and then to determine how much you should be charging for that service based on how much it costs you to provide it. So I was interested because we were taking a closer look at our city budget and the things that we do fund well and the things that we don't fund well. Just to give you a little taste of where the city is, we fund our police department at about 95%, at least in terms of officers, of what we think we need to have on the street. That's pretty good. We fund our fire department about 92.5% of what we think is the requirement to have a fully functioning fire department. We fund our streets at 33%. So our city budget right now, and for many years past, and you don't have to drive very far to figure this out, only funds our streets for about 33% of what it would take to keep our streets at an appropriate level. We fund our capital replacement, for example, when this building falls down and we need a new one, at about 10%, or at least we're hopefully going to start doing that this year. So from one perspective, the city is, we're not about to go bankrupt, we've got things plugging along, but from another perspective, we're never going to get our streets up to where they need to be if we just stay right where we are. The main solution to that is not raising fees, and in fact we should not charge more for a service, and in many cases we cannot charge more for a service than it costs us to provide that service. So parenthetically, the main solution to that not dire but realistic look that I just gave you is some more economic diversity. Some appropriate revitalization all around the town, from the harbor to North Morrow Bay to the downtown. The expansion of businesses are here, like if Neil can expand his oyster business further. So that's the real answer to being able to spend more each year on our streets is not fees. But it caused us to say, hey, let's look at the city and figure out what it costs us to provide certain services or all services in the city, and then we can make a rational decision on how much we should be charging for those services. So I guess the main thing I'd start with and say is this is not about the harbor. This isn't about commercial fishermen. This is looking across the whole city, from the recreation department to the public works department to the planning department and to the harbor department, to figure out what it costs to provide services. How much does it cost to provide certain services? In many cases, we simply didn't know. Eric spent about the last 3 weeks going through a fairly scientific drill to figure out how much it costs the city to provide a slip on one of our commercial fishing slips. So he went through, and he's going to lay this out, but that's something that we didn't know right offhand. We hadn't really done the math on it. And so we've been doing that around the entire city. How much does it cost to rent this room for a wedding? We really didn't know. We didn't know how much it cost to keep the lights on, to have an employee here, to do the maintenance on the building, to share those costs. So across the city, we've been trying to do that assessment. We really sort of want to run the city more like a business, figure out how much your product costs, and then charge appropriately, I would say. So whether it was issuing building permits for an individual residence for Mr. Smith to build his house, how much does that cost to issue that building permit, to provide this room for a wedding, to process a local coastal permit for some level of development, to maintain a mooring point, to run the teen center, all of those things, we wanted to figure out how much it cost us to provide that service, and then figure out how much we should be charging for that service. And that gets to the point of subsidies, because we don't always believe we should charge 100% for what it costs us to provide a service. Sometimes we absolutely will want to subsidize things. We generally subsidize things by how much community benefit they provide. So, for example, we subsidize the police department or the paramedics pretty much at 100%. Nobody gets charged if they have a heart attack for our paramedics to come and treat them. There was an accident outside my office yesterday, and the paramedics showed up, and we didn't charge either the driver nor the girl that got hit on her bicycle to have the paramedics. So that's 100% cost recovery. It's 100% subsidy. Everybody in our city contributes to that out of the various taxes. On the other end, we subsidize building permits by 0%. So if you want to build your own home on Shasta Street, we don't think that everybody else in the city should share in that building for you. So we try not to use general fund taxes to subsidize the building of a single family home, because the beneficiary of that is not the whole community generally. It's a single person. It's that person building that home. And then there's things in the middle. We subsidize the teen center a lot. I think we must think it's a good idea to keep teens off the street or give them something to do. And so the teen center costs us about $75,000 a year to run. And we make back about $5,000, actually about $3,500. So we subsidize the teen center to the tune of about 95%. Other things, youth soccer, we subsidize to the tune of about 15-20%. Because we think that there's a community benefit. And I say we subsidize, I should say we have historically been subsidizing, because that's what we're going through right now, is having the having you provide input and then the council decide what's appropriate. And so that's sort of what we've been going through now. We're looking at fees and subsidy levels across the entire city. And we've asked the HAB here, the advisory board, to look at the harbor fees in general and at commercial fishing in particular. And actually, if you have a conviction that all harbor fees should be subsidized, liveaboards or others, you can certainly make that recommendation. Generally, our sense was that the harbor fees, that personal benefit harbor fees such as a liveaboard probably shouldn't be subsidized, because we don't subsidize a single family home in town either. But we thought that it would be appropriate to get your input specifically on commercial fishermen, because there's a special benefit that our commercial fishing industry brings to Morro Bay, and wanted your input on that. So, and also in closing, say and acknowledge that as I said a minute ago, we hadn't done this math. So we had no idea how much it cost to provide a commercial fishing slip a month ago when we started into this process. So we did a comparison to a private slip just as a comparison to figure out about where we are. The good news is that it costs us much less to provide, and Eric's going to get into this now, costs us much less to provide a commercial fishing slip than it does than at least a private concern charges for a yacht slip or something like that. So generally right now we're probably undercharging or subsidizing by somewhere between 20-30% for our commercial fishing slips. It depends on how you count utilities and some things like that. Right now it's $4.15 a foot with utilities included. It's costing us about $5.50 a foot to provide that service. I'm going to end here by saying that I wanted to provide you sort of the bigger picture from the city perspective, so you understood how this fit in, that this isn't just about, you know, looking hard at the harbor, certainly not about looking hard at commercial fishermen, but it's about looking across the whole city, understanding, you know, being able to see ourselves and understand what our costs are across various services, and then for you to make a recommendation on what an appropriate level of subsidy is for the various services that are provided in our harbor. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Eric.
Thank you, Dave. So you've good. You took most of my stuff here, so I don't have to say too much.
That'll never happen again.
So what we're looking at here is like we say, levels of cost recovery. You know, all our facilities and services have a cost to them, and I've done my best in the time allotted to try and get some reasonably accurate numbers. They're not absolutely perfectly scientific, but they're close. I'd say darn close. with all the tools and data I had at hand. So the way we're going to go here is I'm hoping, normal staff report, public comment, go back to the board. A little preamble into conflicts of interest. I thought going into this that just about every one of you up there on the board was conflicted on one item or another, and it was going to be this musical chairs of up and down and out of the room and back in the room. I talked to the city attorney this afternoon, and thankfully we're not, you're not all conflicted to the point where you're going to be up and down and in and out of the room. There's a Fair Political Practices section 18707.4 that stipulates if you are representing a specific constituency, which all of you are, if you are considering an item that relates to that constituency, whether it be fees or whatever, provided at least half of that constituency or more is affected by the board's action that's being undertaken, which you're participating in, you do not have to recuse yourself because you're specifically named as a constituency. City Council, not so much. They don't have specific constituencies that they're named to, so they don't have that sort of protection from the FPPC because their conflicts are more broad. So the only conflict we have of all our board members, and I hate to single anybody out, but sorry, Neil, because you represent waterfront leaseholders. You're also a slip holder for a couple of our headfoot slips. You have a conflict on that, and that's not your specific to your constituencies. So for that, you need to stand down.
I will recuse myself now.
So the way we're going to do this, you don't need to get down yet. I'm going to go through a real quick discussion section here. Like I said, Dave took most of it. When we get to the point of going to public comment, so we're going to take this section by section. Although I think once we get past slip fees, nobody's conflicted, so we can move on through without having to get up and down. But I think maybe for consistency, if the pleasure of our chairman, if we can go section by section, slip fees, T-peer fees, I'll give a quick presentation on it. We'll go to public comment. When we do slip fees, Neil, that's when you need to be in the audience. When it gets back to the board, that's when you need to be out of the room. We'll get through that, and then we'll come back to T-peer fees. You can come back for that, and we'll go through the rest where everybody's okay sitting, and then maybe we'll just take it individual one at a time. If there's public comment, reach out for public comment on moorings after I do the spiel on that. Is that
so? We want to do step by step. In
I think
other
so.
Words. Okay, so
keep
we'll
it clean,
slip fees,
consistent.
And then public yeah. comment on slip fees, and then go down the road.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I won't repeat.
Yeah, Ron.
Hold on. The process that you just laid out, I'm a little bit confused. When you said comes back to the board, category comes back to the board, are you anticipating that the board is going to take specific action on each one of these categories?
Or yes.
Are you talking about?
Yes. I'd like to take them category by category because some may lend themselves to a higher level of cost recovery and some may lend themselves to less.
Okay.
And if we take them all in one big discussion and then try and get to the end and discuss them all at once, I think we're going to get a little lost if we do them one at a time and focus.
Okay.
And especially for our fishermen, if we can focus on the slip fees, and they're first on the list anyhow, get them done. We can get our public comment, and we can get them on their way.
I understand. So the issue is category by category.
Correct.
If the board has a position regarding cost recovery.
Correct.
Got it. Thank you.
So we'll start with, I'll go through my staff report on that category. We'll go to public comment, bring it back to the board, discussion if any action occurs, and then move on to the next category.
Okay.
Okay. Everybody on the same page?
Yeah.
So again, as Dave said, as a general rule, you can get less than full cost recovery in government, generally speaking, when there's some level of public benefit. Some things have more benefit than others. So that's kind of where we want to lead and see what each category sort of comprises and what level of cost recovery we want to try to get. I would like to avoid, if we can, getting into nickels and dimes and no, not 230 this and let's 430 that, more in the 10,000-foot sense of hey, that's an appropriate level of cost recovery, or not an appropriate level, or let's get a little more, let's get a little less, so forth. So that's kind of where I'd like to go. So with that, we'll lead into slip fees. And let me find all my notes and get on my many 10 pages of hand-scrawled stuff here. So in case things come up, I know where we need to go. So currently we have three main rates for our 50 commercial fishing assigned slips. $4.15 per foot per month for qualified commercial fishermen in our assigned slips. $8.30 per foot per month, basically double the fisherman's rate. And that's for commercial or recreational fishermen in our slips when our fishermen are out fishing somewhere else and we sublease them when they're vacant. And $1.15 per foot per day for up to 7 days for transient subleases of vacant slips. That's the same. Hang on. Let me get my folder.
Well, I don't understand that.
No, hang on. I've got... There's a lot of moving parts to this.
Do we have enough chairs in the audience, or do we need more chairs? Oh, okay. We're not. We're okay.
There's some seats in the front row, too.
Okay, so on the first item where you've got $4.15, $8.30, and $1.15, $1.15 is our daily sublease rate. That if somebody subleases for the month and we basically when our fishermen are gone, we know that Fred is gone. So I shouldn't use Fred because I think we have a Fred out there today. Marcos is gone. He's not out fishing. He's gone. We know a slip's available for the month of May. We rent that out to some other recreational boater for the month. He pays $8.30 per foot per month. If we don't have anybody to fill that slip and some sailboat comes through because it's gotten windy and he needs to hide for a few days and we put him in a slip, he's $1.15 per foot per day up to 7 days, at which point the daily rate after 7 days starts exceeding the monthly rate, so he sticks to the monthly rate becomes the de facto or the default because the daily rate gets extremely high on $1.15 per foot per day. So that's the difference in there. Does that make sense? We don't get a lot on the daily rate. Mostly it's on the monthly rate. We get a few coming in on the daily rate. But after 7 days, it gets more expensive than the monthly rate, so we just stick them on the monthly rate.
Oh, that's per day, $1.15
yeah.
per day. Okay,
I
see.
So if they're there for 8 days, 12 days, 30 days, they're going to pay the full monthly rate.
That makes sense.
Okay?
I understand now.
So on average, and I've broken this, the cost down to a per foot per month, to keep all things equal and have everything compared to a same base. Our current estimated average cost to provide our slips, those 50 slips, over a 30-year basis, which is basically about the life of our slips. I know some of them that we've got right now are a few years older than 30. Some of them are younger, but slips generally last about 30 years. Wood-built plastic float slips, about 30 years. So you amortize that cost to build it over 30 years and all the annual and daily and other fees and costs and stuff that are costs that it takes to administer all that, including administrative overhead, which is me and my staff and everybody, breaks down to $5.48 per foot per month. We have approximately 2,112 linear feet of slips available to rent. So I know some of our boats are longer than our slips. Some of our boats are shorter than our slips. So it's all based on the linear feet we have to rent just to keep everything fair and consistent. Of that 548, 349 is capital replacement and maintenance and repair. That's basically to build it at year one, and then over 30 years, how much to repair it and maintain it over those years. $1.23 for administrative overhead. That's the people to manage all the fees and billing and administration of everything. 25 cents per foot per month for insurance, to insure all that stuff. About 40 cents for electricity. Electricity and water vary, so I've tried to take an average of the several years to get a sort of a broad general average number. It's about 40 cents per foot per month for electricity under current rates, and about 11 cents per foot per month per water. In terms of evaluating and seeing what other harbors did, I took a stab at looking up and down the coast of California with some commercial fishing, some harbors that have commercial fishing rates that were lower than their regular rates, hoping that while I wasn't trying to do a market comparison and say, well, Morro Bay is 415, but Ventura is, you know, 8-something or whatever the number is, I wanted to see if there is a set differential between the commercial slips and the non-commercial slips, and unfortunately there wasn't. There was 5% was about the lowest difference, and 60-some-odd percent was the highest difference. It was all over the map. But those numbers I included in here just as a comparison to an average of what commercial folks pay and other slips and harbors that we surveyed. Certainly it's not inclusive of everything up and down the coast. It's a handful, and that's $9.37 per foot per month, commercially other spots in California. And then recreationally, it's $11.20 per foot per month up and down the coast from those same harbors. Our current recreational slip rate here in Morro Bay, including State Park Marina and most of the big folks out there like Marina Square and the old boatyard down at the south end, is $13.36 per foot per month. That number skewed a little high because there's two operators in that list that are up in the $15.50, $16 range. So since it's averaged over only about six players there, it skews that number pretty high. So our recreational rates aren't that far off. I think if you took those two highs out, you'd be back down in the $11 or so range. So that's where our numbers are. So if you look at it on a percentage rate, our slip fees are about 76% of full recovery of what it takes for us to supply that. We do, and I had a discussion with a couple of our members here yesterday, when our fishermen are gone, they pay 25% of their regular rate. So it's called the vacancy rate. So we have an effective 75% revenue loss for those fishermen when they're gone. But we do sublease those slips out at $8.30 per foot per month, as you've seen. And it's actually, there's a net gain on it. We make up that 75% plus some. Exactly how much we make up at this point without spending another week on crunching numbers, because I just don't have the data readily available yet. It's some years we had huge amounts of sublease revenue. Some years we were down in the dumps, and I couldn't determine any rhyme or reason of why to try and equate some sort of an average or an equivalent. But we do make up beyond what we lose, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 cents per foot per month to a dollar per foot per month. So effectively, if you take that 25 cents to a dollar, you can really add that to the commercial fishing rate, and we're effectively making more money than the $4.15. Exactly how much I can't tell you with a transient, just because I don't have the numbers collated and all the history put together yet. So that's where we are on slip fees. So what we're looking for, again, as we spoke earlier, a general public and Harbor Advisory Board discussion and consideration on, is this an appropriate level of cost recovery or is it not, given the parameters, given what the industry provides or what this fee provides and who it's being provided to and what sort of public benefit may be there. So with that, I will conclude.
If I can throw one more thing in. Several of you doing math up there. So as you're doing that, also we'd appreciate some input on utilities, specifically electric and water. So the way that the commercial slips currently work is that utilities are provided. We don't meter electric or water at all. I'm generally uncomfortable with that, and I'm quite uncomfortable with that when it comes to water right now. So it seems to me that considering metering electric and water just so we can monitor that use, that's something that we would appreciate your input on. And I'll say again, this doesn't have to be solved at this Harbor Advisor Board tonight. I don't intend to take this broad subject to council for several months, particularly because I want you to have time to think through and provide us great input. But just doing some quick math, if you look at that, if you look at the numbers that Eric has there, second under slip fees. So Eric's totaled out about $5.50 is our cost to per foot is our cost to provide those slips. If you take out the utilities, it's about 50%. So you're down to $5. So it costs us about $5 without utilities. Right now we're charging $4.15 with. So right now we are subsidizing about 20%, $5 down to 14, plus putting in utilities. If it were at $4.55, then that would be 10%, and if it were $5, that would be full cost recovery. So as you think this through, having your input on the utilities and your expertise on how things really work down in the harbor would be helpful, whether it would be wise for us to install electric and water meters for the various slips, or just include it in the rent, or figure out another way to do it. That would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, so what I think I want to do right now is have public comment on the slip fees only right now. So you have 3 minutes. Eric will be timing, and so whoever would like to come up and give us some public comment, please.
And so as a reminder, Neil, you can participate in the audience if you want to speak. If you don't want to speak, you can still sit here and observe, but once it gets back to the board for discussion.
And if you could state your name, please, for the record.
Hi, good evening. Rick Grantham, Morro Bay resident. As someone that sat up there for a number of years, first of all, I just want to say thanks for your time, and because I don't think you guys are getting paid a lot being up there. So thanks for your service. I just want to address the issue regarding possible increase on the commercial fishermen. And the reason this was done years back was because when all the new restrictions came out, and it caused our local fishermen to have to go way out and burn a lot of fuel, a lot of wear and tear on their equipment, a lot of hours spent paying their people to have to go to different areas to fish, which you all know that. The thing is, those obstacles to them making a living still exist today. So I don't see why we should all of a sudden change and go back and do that. I think what we're doing is a good thing. I think it's a nice thing. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it shows support for a group of very hardworking people here that benefit the city a lot more than what people might think when they bring those fish in here, employ the waitresses, employ the cooks, feed the tourists and the locals. So I think we ought to do whatever we can for them. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
Hi, I'm Stan House, Morro Bay, California. I've lived here all my life. This is concerning the raising of the slip fees. I'd like to say commercial fishing has always been a part of Morro Bay's history and culture. Commercial fishing is what sets Morro Bay apart from all the other coastal communities in San Luis Obispo County. Every year it becomes more and more difficult because of onerous regulations, fishing restrictions, etc. It's a hard life with no paid vacations, paid sick leave, or health benefits, and it's important that the city of Morro Bay realizes and recognizes what public benefits commercial fishing bring to our community. One, last year there was approximately $10 million worth of commercial landings in Morro Bay. The commercial fishermen provide tax money from the fuel they purchase in the city. The commercial fishermen donated a $1 million ice machine to the city. The commercial fishermen provide an annual college scholarship at Morro Bay High School. The fish markets that sell fish from these boats provide sales tax to the city. The commercial fishermen donate between $10,000 and $20,000 annually to local nonprofits. They participate in the Lighted Boat Parade, Harbor Festival, and Blessing of the Fleet, all of which bring tourists to town. At the current time, the Central Coast Women for Fisheries is in the process of donating a sculpture to the city titled Fisherman's Family Sculpture, which is valued at $100,000. They and their families volunteer countless hours to various local community events. The commercial slips are currently adjusted for CPI each year. Raising the fees would only give the city an additional $3,000 per month from the commercial fishermen. The very idea, as the current city manager said, that commercial fishermen are being subsidized is ludicrous. Each year, the Cable Liaison Committee, made up of commercial fishermen, pays the way for our mayor, harbor master, and city manager to travel to Washington, D.C. to lobby for funds to maintain and dredge our harbor. Basically, if anything, the commercial fishermen are subsidizing the city and have been for years. Recently, a commercial fishing boat was taken off the official city logo. Without commercial fishing, there would be no harbor dredging funds, and in high probability, no Coast Guard rescue boat or Coast Guard office in Morro Bay. All of the above doesn't even include the money and TOT brought in by the sports fishing boats. I ask you to leave the slip fees alone. Do everything you can to help support commercial fishing. Morro Bay commercial fishermen contribute more than their fair share to our city.
Okay. Anyone else?
Randy Can, commercial fisherman, slip holder. As far as you guys talking about Ventura slip holders and whatnot, there's no, I mean, we don't have bathrooms here. We don't have anything here. I mean, I go down to my boat. I don't even have a place to park. I mean, there's a, when you consider other ports, they have parking permits. They have bathrooms. They have laundry. We don't have anything here. So consider that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's certainly interesting being on this side of the mic.
State your name?
I'm getting there. My name's Andrea Luker, and I'm the executive director of the Morobay Community Quota Fund. The Quota Fund was born about a year ago, and the purpose of the Quota Fund is to secure historic fishing here in Morobay. I also have a little bit of experience in municipal government, serving 27 years here for the residents. Tonight I'm speaking before you as a resident of Estero Bay. History shows us in Morobay that we've had a long and rich and supportive relationship with our commercial fishermen, both economically and non-economically. During my time with the city, I kept a notebook on my desk that contained resolutions, proclamations, and other staff reports that dealt with how the city supported commercial fishing in general. It's thick, and I still have it. Tonight, I want to speak directly to the issue of increased slip fees for commercial fishing. I was really concerned when I read the staff report, the April 14th staff report that was authored by the city manager. In particular, there were two issues that concerned me. Number one was the recommendation that the harbor fees receive no subsidy. I was happy to see in that sentence, though, the recommendation was to bring this issue to your board, which hopefully can make some good decisions. The second concern with that staff report was the statement that commercial fishing slips currently receive approximately 66% subsidy. And I think that number really got people concerned. I applaud the harbor director, Eric Indersby, for his detailed staff report in tonight's packet, and we appreciate the figures that he provides, and we see that actually the subsidy is a little less than 30%, as opposed to the 66% that was originally put in the staff report. The point I want to make tonight is the City Council can certainly, the City Council, after you give their your recommendation, can certainly make a decision to reduce or eliminate the subsidy they currently provide to the commercial fishermen. But you, as the Harbor Advisory Board, need to make sure that you inform the Council regarding the consequences of a decision like that. In my math, it looks like an additional revenue generated by mandating 100% cost recovery of the slips is between $35,000 to $40,000 per year. Certainly that amount is not inconsequential, but in the world of a $27 million budget, it is inconsequential. We all understand the subsidizing fees can clearly be done if a corresponding public benefit is found, and I think that clearly the commercial fishing industry provides a significant public benefit, including historical, economic, and cultural areas. So we pass the legal test and know the fees can be subsidized. We also know that recovering 100% of the slip fees is not going to significantly affect the budget. So really what this becomes is a philosophical discussion in regard to subsidy. And here's a couple of reasons that I hope you can understand and will be supported by both you and the Morobay City Council. First, we highly value our fishing families here in Morobay. And I'm almost done. Second, we value our fishing community in terms of its rich historical significance. We also understand the danger involved in this profession. We understand that the fishermen have had to deal with a lot of regulatory issues. We acknowledge the economic impact, and I won't go into the details, but I had them for you. I'm sure you've all read those. Lastly, I'll just close by saying that the fishing industry has been through the meat grinder for the last 20 years. They've been through it, and let's tonight make a recommendation to the City Council to leave the slip fees alone. Thank you. Have a good meeting.
Good evening. My name is Susan Stewart. I'm a 27-year resident of Morobay and a business owner in town. I'm not a fisherman, but I have friends who are. One of the things that just struck me in listening to the reports was another way of looking at increasing your cost recovery is not just to increase what you're collecting, but look at reducing the cost of providing the service. So that's something to consider. Additionally, here's some thoughts. As you consider increases in slip rates for commercial fishermen, keep in mind that there is generally a big difference between business and commercial rentals and vacation or luxury rentals. I understand that there are costs associated with maintaining slips, but in any businesses, the cost of transient businesses or visitors are higher than those of home port businesses or residents, and there is a higher economic value for the community in permanent businesses. The staff report states that less than full cost recovery of fees for services is predicated on some degree of public benefit derived from the service or facility. I would argue that in addition to the measurable benefits of an active fishing economy, our fishing industry is a tourist attraction and part of our local branding. Sorry to all you fishermen out there. I know you're hardworking business people, but you're also part of our display. You're part of what brings people to this town. As regards to the April 8th staff report, I'd like to point out again that there is a big difference between private lease site costs for yachts and pleasure boats and a city commercial fishing boat. A private lease site represents a for-profit business. A government is not meant to be a for-profit business. I respect that cost recovery is important, but I have also seen dry land businesses pushed off their moorings by radical and self-serving rent increases, and the subsequent economic hardship is felt by the entire business district. Also, it occurred to me that since slips are sublet when the leasing fishing boat is away, in effect, the local fisherman is, as Stan said, subsidizing the city. Numbers can be made to tell whatever story you want them to. Be careful in comparing other harbor rates with our own and review whether those ports are primarily recreational ports versus commercial fishing ports. And finally, I would say that there's a difference between subsidizing an industry and claiming or supporting a heritage that is rebuilding and can lead us to greater economic stability as a community. Thank you.
So do we have any other speakers tonight on this slip? Okay, come on up to the podium.
Hi, Owen Hackelman. I'm a slip holder down here. I'd just like to relate my experience to subletting for a year and a half before I actually qualified for a slip and got one. I think that that's a vital thing to consider when you're actually factoring the revenue you generate from the slips, and also just the benefits that we provide, and you know, jobs. And I mean, I think most of the guys here, we go catch $5 worth of fish. We're probably losing around $4 of that by the time we actually get our paycheck. So I'd like you to consider that all that money is going back into the economy, and I think that's pretty significant. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so one more? Okay.
Craig Barbary, my wife Marlise and I fished the preamble out of here. We have for 27 years now and 10 years in Apple prior to that. Stan pretty much said everything I came here to say. But I'd like to back up a little bit of what Randy said. For several years, we had a slip both in Santa Barbara and in Morro Bay. The slip in Santa Barbara was more expensive, about twice what we pay here. But they had perfect restrooms. They had locking gates so the public couldn't get to the boat. They had parking permits. They had key cards for showers. And when we left Santa Barbara, we had the option of selling that slip. We owned that slip. We could have sold it for great profit. We chose not to. We gave it back to the city of Santa Barbara, but we had that option. So does everybody in Santa Barbara. And Santa Cruz was another one that was listed. The fellows in Santa Cruz have the ability to sublease their slip for full value or more when they leave to go somewhere else, rather than giving it to the city to make the money. So those are two big differences. And the condition of our docks. Marlise and I fish everywhere from the Mexican border to Sitka, Alaska. We've been in and out of almost every port on the West Coast. And there isn't a better port on the West Coast in Morro Bay. There's not a better harbor staff. There's not a better community to live in. But there are a whole lot better docks, and there are lower prices. So you need to keep that in mind. And one other thing, the cable grants also supplied the harbor department with the new motors for their boats. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lori French, Morro Bay. Our family has two boats. We have one. My brother-in-law has another. And just a little FYI on community benefit. TBID took a picture of my brother-in-law's boat, the Nadine, and used it in all its marketing displays on the internet and in Sunset Magazine. I don't know how many of you read Sunset and saw that, but that went nationwide. And that was just one tiny community benefit. The family got nothing out of it, but the fact that Morro Bay is portrayed as a commercial fishing village says a lot. We're here. We supply a lot of businesses. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Wayne Moody. I want to thank Stan for stealing my thunder. Basically, he must have stole my little speech. But anyway, a couple of days ago in the Telegram Tribune came out with this picture here of a tourist watching boats unload at the city dock, you know. That's a public benefit, and I'm sure they didn't just watch the boats unload and leave. I think a lot of people here today were here because they heard there might be, our slips might go up 66%, and I heard the city manager state that they hadn't done the math, hadn't looked over things. Why 66% came out in his staff report makes me scratch my head, you know, and it especially when in his staff reports he said that he can't recover any more than what it actually cost for the slips and the support about it. When I came and calculated what Eric had come up with, I came up with, we're at default of like 24%. There's a big difference. I would, hopefully, the city manager would go back and that his staff report went to the city council, as I believe, and I hope that the city council would realize that he was about 45% off, or 42, whatever. Thank you.
Okay, hearing or seeing no one else, I want to bring this back to the board then and to have discussion. And Neil is eligible to come back now, Eric?
No, he has to be out of the room now.
No, he has to leave.
I see. Okay.
He's banished.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. What good input. I'm glad that we were, Eric, very good job on your numbers, seriously. Not as far off, too, as the 66%. I think that got a lot of the audience and a lot of the public a little bit perturbed and a little bit concerned, rightfully so. So with that, Gene?
I've always been supportive of our commercial fishermen. As far as community benefit, the fish that the commercial fishermen bring in, that's protein for our nation. And that's definitely a public benefit. As far as the utilities, to put in water meters and electrical meters, which would be, have to be changed or metered every time we had a new slip holder in there or a new transit in there, would increase the cost of our staff to review these things and keep track of them. So I think you're better off leaving the whole situation just the way it is. It's worked fine for the last 40 years. I'd continue on with it.
Thank you, Gene. Alan?
I participated in that discussion in Eric's office, and Eric said that he was going to work some more on that number for the sublease, but I can tell you right now that he'll never get a number because it's not a number you can get. It changes every year, the amount of boats that leave, the amount of vacancies they're able to fill. What we do know is that last year, the 13 to 14 year, that the sublease rate brought the revenue from commercial fishing up to a number of almost $5 a foot. I think it was $4.97. At that point, we're about a 10% subsidy. So that is that's something to think about. One other thing that hasn't been mentioned yet about contribution to society and to the city is I read somewhere recently in a letter to NOAA that it's good to consider food security in case of an emergency, and that is an issue that always gets overlooked, but the day may come when we'll be really glad to have our commercial fishermen. That's all.
Thank you, Alan. Lynn?
I commend the speakers who did a very good job in pointing out the advantages that our fishermen give to our community, and I agree with them. I also agree with Gene that putting in electrical meters, I don't know how much that costs, but I imagine it would be quite costly. Electrical and water meters would not pay back, would not give you your return on investment for quite a long time. So, and again, I will ditto Gene and say leave it as it is. It's working pretty well, and our subsidy of the fishermen is very modest.
Dana?
Yes, I would also have to agree with my colleagues, and I think it does come down to what Andrea was saying about philosophy, because we already have the benefit. And this cost recovery percentage keeps dropping as we continue this meeting. So I think we can safely say that we should probably just leave it the way it is. We live in a unique community where everybody pitches in, and the fishermen do a really good job of that.
Ron?
As a self-employed businessman since I was 13 years old, I absolutely relate to the concept of cost recovery. If a business person doesn't recover their costs, they're out of business. Does that apply to a city? Well, given that we could model the city as a business, it offers services. The citizens, the taxpaying citizens and other contributors, other paying parties, pay for those services or contribute to those services. So they're I'm a balanced budget guy. Having said that, insofar as harbor-related fees are concerned, not just slip fees, the only information I have at the moment, and I'm not denigrating the information because there's a lot of it here, is in the staff report for this particular agenda item. And it strikes me that there might be some opportunities to identify additional revenue opportunities for harbor-related fees to include slip fees in T-Pier fees, in sublease policies, and in launch ramp parking fees. So I would defer to the people in the city who administer all this and who run the numbers and who are welcome to correct me, but there may be some opportunity there to study those fees and to see what sort of contribution might reasonably be extracted from those fees that would contribute to achieving 100% of cost recovery across the board for all harbor fees, including slip fees, that might allow the slip fees to be at some level, some number of slip fees, and I wouldn't advocate that for recreational boating, but perhaps for the commercial fishermen, that would allow those slip fees for that category of users to be charged at less than 100% cost recovery. So that's, I'm not sure I was very clear, but I would like to have the opportunity to encourage the city and the board to examine the fees that are collected from all of the harbor-related activities that are listed in the staff report to see if there's an opportunity to generate sufficient funds to allow commercial fishermen to stay where they are or to have some slight increase or to stage an increase over some period of time, that at the end of the day, when you mix them all together, 100% cost recovery is achieved.
Well, I think that's a good thing to try to achieve. But right now, I think as we're trying to break this all up, we're talking slip fees only for the commercial fishermen. And, I mean, at least this particular topic, the way that this has been constructed. And, you know, I kind of leaned toward, I've been a businessman here also for 40 years, and if you don't have cost recovery over a period of time, you will go out of business. But as I listen to the audience tonight, and I have lived here in Morro Bay for 18 years, and I've lived in the county for 40-something years, Morro Bay is a unique community. And I'm a firm believer is that, you know, what works, don't try to change it. And one of the things about Morro Bay that I feel is so unique is the fishing community feel. And I'd like to keep it that way. And I kind of concur with some of my other colleagues here is that, at least for right this minute, I don't advocate any type of changes on the commercial fishing slips. So with that said, do we have any other discussion, or is there any type of motion that we would like to make for the slip fees for the commercial fishing? Gene, Alan?
Bill, if I could.
Dave?
It'll just help me to be able to take numbers back. This is a great discussion. So as Eric said, he's sort of gone through and factored in the vacancy rate and it's hard to judge as Alan noted, but it looks like the vacancy rate adds about 66 cents thereabouts a foot a month, which means doing all this math and coming out right now, it's about $4.80 is what. Is the effective slip rate if you include what the city regains from the vacancy piece. Putting that over $5.50 is 85%. So as I work this around through the city, I'm trying to sort of have clean numbers so we can compare. So what I hear, assuming that you, well, what I've heard anyway, and if you pass a motion, that'll be fine, that is the sense of the Harbor Advisory Board is that leaving the rates as they are, which is about a 15% subsidy, is the recommendation of the board. And I appreciate what Ron said about looking across the entire enterprise at balancing out cost recovery across the whole enterprise. The one other thing you might want to discuss and give us some feedback on, it's probably about 24 months in order to recover the cost of installing electric and water meters. So we pay about $12,000 a year for utilities at the commercial slips, and we anticipate it might cost about $24,000 in order to meter those slips. So that would be that's a little bit of data for you. The utilities are fairly significant, and then if you took the utilities off this, then essentially the subsidy is 5% right now, 4%. It's close to zero. If you charged for utilities, is that helpful at all?
Yeah, it does. And I had a discussion with Eric also regarding both the metered of the electrical and the water. The electrical, apparently, they have these plugs now that are fairly easy to install and easy to monitor, according to Eric. I think we should be probably looking at that, and maybe not right now today, but it's something to get facts and figures. I have talked to a couple fishermen personally, and they have no objection to having metered water and electrical, especially in today's times, if we are going to have this issue with the water for the forthcoming future. So I think definitely we should look at that in the future and maybe get some hard figures and bring it back to the board and see if that's something that we can start initiating. But in light of what we're dealing with tonight, and given the numbers, as Dana stated, it seems to get lower and lower and lower as we discuss on the 100% cost recovery for the slips, I would like to, can I make a recommendation to leave the rates for the slip fees for the commercial fishing as is? I'd like to make that motion.
I'll second it.
So we have a motion to leave the slip fees and as is. Do we have, and we have a first and we have a second. Do we have any discussion? Alan?
We're arguing for continuing the current rates with the CPI.
Correct.
And at whatever the subsidy level that number is, which we can't quite pin down, that we're satisfied with.
That's correct, right at this point in time.
Okay.
Lynn? Dana?
I would just say what you were talking about, bringing this back as far as the utilities go, to get some better numbers. Then maybe the Harvard Advisory Board can look at that, and that could be something else that, you know, we can discuss. Fishermen can tell us more about that.
Ron? Okay. All right, no other discussion. I would like to, we have a motion on the table to leave the slip fees as is for the recommendation that the HAB makes to the City Council as asked by the city manager here. All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. All voted no. Any abstained? Okay. So the motion passes. We have 5 for it, 1 abstain. Thank you. Okay, so the next thing that we're going to discuss, thank you very much for your comments tonight, and it was very helpful, and thank you for everything.
Before everybody bolts, we are discussing T-Pier fees next, which obviously has a commercial fishing element to it, if anybody wants to stay or not.
Okay. So we'll give everyone a couple minutes to clear out that wanted to leave. Neil, I thought you went home. Okay, Eric, I'd like to get into the T-Pier fees, please. You can go into that.
Yeah, so same sort of rationale to a degree, although piers are a little harder to compare because while I know a linear feet of available space, boats raft up and there's no assignment, and so it's a whole different comparison. The methodology I used on the pier, with the exception of the South T-Pier, which burned down a few years back, a couple decades back, there was a capital cost to that. Typically on our piers and other larger facilities, there's not a capital cost. that gets a replacement every X number of years. It's built and it gets large capital improvement or major maintenance and repairs over the years. You never, hopefully, knock on wood, we're never going to replace the North Tee Pier. We're going to put $400,000 in here and $800,000 there and just continue that on a basis forever, which is the basis that I generally followed on the piers. South Tee Pier, obviously, we do have a cost to it. I do have to change a couple of my numbers and some of my methodology in here. So what I did on the piers was I took the two piers, averaged them together, averaged the cost together over a 60-year period, because historically we've every 20 years we've gone in and done our major maintenance and repair episodes. And three cycles is generally covering the whole pier. We've never gone in and done everything on a pier at any one time. We've kind of taken it in phases every 20 years, and I figured over a 60-year period we've pretty much gotten to everything, and then we go back to the beginning. So amortized over a 60-year period, looked at our historic cost to do that and what kind of maintenance we put into it, came up with essentially a three-year average, or I'm sorry, cost for the piers with the loan, the South Tee Pier loan, and everything else, the major maintenance and repair over the 20-year cycles. What I didn't factor in, I factored in the cost of the loan incorrectly. So the first number you see there, $62,706 per year, that's $1,400 a month short, due to miscalculation on my loan amortization. That number should be $64,000, call it $64,000 a year for the two piers, per pier. Piers being first come, first serve basis, the rate there is 25 cents per foot per month, $2.35 for electrical use. If you're plugged in, you get charged for electricity. Yep.
That can't be 25 cents per foot per month, really?
I mean, per day. Sorry, that was my, and I circled it in red, and I'm glad you caught that, and I did. Yeah, 25 cents per foot per day. Sorry. That was my other typo. It's not per foot per month, per foot per day. So $2.35 per day for electrical. If you're plugged in, you're getting charged $2.35. Not technically metered, but we do recoup some of our electrical cost. So, again, the cost to provide the piers, about $64,000 per year. I based it on a three-year annual average of pier revenues for the two piers, and we're getting about $63,000 in revenue. So pretty darn close. By my numbers, I think that came to about 98% cost recovery. Electrical, that's without electrical factored in. The electrical by itself, we get about $4,400 per year in electrical fees, while we're billed from PG&E about $4,800. The piers and are billed separately, so we are able to pull that apart. So on the North Tee Pier, we were $4,400 in electrical fee usage that we got in fees, and $4,800 in billing, so a little bit short on revenue to expenditure. On the South Tee Pier, kind of same differential. There's more power use at the South Tee Pier, but it's about the same differential. So in total, we're at about 91% on the electrical recovery on the piers. So again, same sort of discussion. Piers are primarily, though not exclusively, for commercial fishing boats, unlike our slips. We do have a city policy that says all our facilities are primarily for commercial fishing use, not exclusively on the piers, and we do get some recreational use. But they're not charged a different rate than the commercial fishermen. If you're a sailboat, you're paying the same guy, same rate as the commercial fisherman sitting next to you. So same general discussion that, you know, is this a proper level of recovery? And we're pretty darn close on the piers.
So what do you charge per foot for the piers, or how does that work, Eric?
It's per the length of the boat.
Oh.
Okay, overall length of the boat, 25 cents per foot per day.
That's it. Okay, apologize.
And that doesn't change as a function of time, so there's not a monthly that it rolls into?
No, it doesn't. We used to have what was called the 90-day rate. The rate almost doubled after 90 days if the boat didn't move, and the initial inception of that was to discourage boats from just parking and becoming projects, becoming, in the airline industry, hangar queens, biggest maybe pier queen, was to discourage that. It never really worked. What ended up happening is folks like Alan and some others that would be real seasonal fishermen that fish primarily one season for 3-4 months out of the year, and they'd be parked the rest of the year working on the boat,
you know, they weren't the boats that we're trying to discourage. They weren't project boats. They would just have to go move off to another facility for a day and then come back, and the cost and the headache to administer that just got to be too much, so we eliminated that fee. More aggressive taken after folks for not paying their fees. Typically, those boats aren't paying their fees anyhow, so being more aggressive on bill collection and lien sailing has largely eliminated the problem that that scheme of 90 after 90 days was trying to solve. So, long answer to a short
Eric,
question.
Now, Eric, when we were talking in your office regarding the electric meters, now that my memory serves me correct, we were discussing mostly the T-piers. Is that correct? I mean, we were probably talking both, but the T-piers would be maybe a better first approach to take a look at trying to get at least 100% cost recovery for the electrical per slip. Is that correct?
For the piers themselves?
Yeah. Or is that even more?
Like I say, we're at about 91% cost recovery on the electric of the piers. Water, we don't charge for water. It's unmetered or there's no charge for it. We do know what we pay specifically on the piers and our slips as well. We know what the meters are down to the slips. But as far as if we were to try and meter it versus what we do now, $2.35 per day, we're not far off with what the current electrical rates are. Where that number originally came from, I couldn't tell you. It's adjusted over the years on a CPI, and that's just where it is, and it's darn close.
Okay, so we talked about water and that some harbors charge a percentage. In other words, I think we looked at the bill that we're getting for water. Is that correct, Eric, or we didn't know what that bill was? Do we know how much we're getting charged for water for all the usage per month on
yes.
the North T Pier?
Yeah, we have separate meters. We have separate water and electric meters on all of our slips and piers. The only exception to that is our South T Pier and the slips immediately south of the pier, what we call our Beach Street slips. That's on one electric meter, so I can't separate those two out. So on the South T Pier, I separate out the electrical as a function of basically mass of, you know, how much usage is on the pier percentage wise more or less versus the slips, and that's how I got the difference there.
Well, it seems to me that again, water being the ultimate, and we're not, you know, we had a discussion regarding what we are really being charged for water, and is that a true figure, because in some respects we're not even contributing to the sewer, and in the bill that we're getting it includes both water and sewer, which really isn't a true figure. I would really like to charge for the uses of the water on both T piers and try to recover at least 100% of that we aren't right now. That might make up that difference to generate more of the 100% cost recovery for the city's cost on the two T piers. Is that even something that is feasible?
It's feasible to. I don't think you can really meter it. It'd be more of a coin-op
right.
sort of system,
or a monthly fee per boat, right?
Yeah. But again, you're at the piers. The overall fee minus electricity, you're about 98%. You're
right.
Pretty darn close on the electrical, about 91%. So, similar discussion with the slips. You know, we're with the numbers with the subleasing. You know, you're at about a 85% cost recovery on the slips, and that's an acceptable rate. Are we acceptable rate at 98 and 91? That's, I guess, the discussion. Or do we want to try and get a higher rate?
Ron?
Eric, does the...
Yeah, Ron, I do apologize. My fault. This is now up to public comment. Is anyone here in the audience like to discuss the T-piers, the rates, any discussion on that to give us some insight, input on your feelings?
How's it going? Joseph Conchellos. I'll talk a little bit about the T-piers, I guess. I've spent a lot of time on them since I don't have a slip. I think I'll start off by saying that the T-piers fall into Measure D area, which is really set aside for commercial fishing, and it's mainly used by commercial fishermen. The difference in the price for a T-pier, to tie up on the T-pier as opposed to sublease a slip, at least in my case, was about $20 a month. It was about $20 a month less to tie up on the T-pier. So, I mean, it really wasn't a whole lot less. That being said, like Craig was saying about the dock condition, the T-piers, the north one's a lot better now. The south one is pretty iffy. It's, you know, so I don't see us having to pay more for something that's kind of subpar, I guess I'll say. I'll end it there because I wasn't really prepared to talk on the T-piers. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Ed Sylvester, been here for about 40 years, fisherman. I live here. We're talking about water usages. Okay, my water bill is $62 a month. $45 of that is sewer. $16 is water for three water usages. Now, has anybody been down there to watch how many water usages are used down on the slips? No, because the city uses a lot of water usages. The Coast Guard uses a lot of water usages. But actually, the guys that own the boats, they're a little more conservative. I don't even wash my boat off anymore. I got pigeon crap all over it, bird crap all over it. I use salt water, but not fresh water. And most of the guys use. Now, the yachtsmen, they use a lot of fresh water. No? No? What do they use? Salt water? Well, good deal then. But when they come out of that little squirter there, I know myself as I use salt water. And I know I pay $16 for three water usages for my home. But the sewer gets me good. Okay, see you later.
Thank you. This is Sylvester. Okay, Joe, come on up again. Talking on this subject.
Sorry, Joe Conchalos again. The one thing that I did want to bring up, too, is that, like I said, the T-piers are used primarily by commercial fishermen. If you go down and look at it, there's commercial fishing boats everywhere. Now, where we take into account the slips, we're talking about the slip rates, and we found that that was all right. There's, what I heard, 50 slips. There's a lot more commercial fishermen in town than that, and we can't all get slips because there's simply not enough. So I think if we hike the rate of the T-pier, it's almost like penalizing the people who cannot get a slip simply because there is not enough slips available. That was just what I wanted to add in. Thank you.
Okay, any other public discussion, any comments from the audience? Hearing none, I'm going to bring this subject back to the board. And Ron, you had a comment. I apologize for interrupting you.
No apology needed. Actually, one of my thoughts, Joe preempted my thought. That's part of the reason I abstained on the prior vote. This thing's got to be, you can parse it out all night long, but it's got to be looked at in some overall manner. If you take them one at a time, I think we're handicapping our ability to achieve some level of optimum, whatever that might be, 100 or less, some optimal level of cost recovery. Eric, as it relates to the T-piers, I asked you this question earlier today, so forgive me for doing it in the public forum, but it's still an important question. Does the city know how many lineal feet of T-PIR usage there is on an annualized basis?
The city does not have that figure at hand. The city, meaning me, could probably determine it with plenty of looking at records and seeing what boats tied up and figuring out what their lengths are and adding it up. Yeah, the data is there. It's not in a format that I can just put on a spreadsheet right now and punch up a number, no.
Thank you. And to Joe's point, if my numbers are correct, and doesn't mean that my math, that it is correct, but if my numbers are correct, using a 50-foot vessel as an exemplar, at 25 cents per foot per day, that's $7.50 per foot per month as a comparative rate to a commercial slip. I'm not making a point. I'm just providing some information. So as, and the reason I did that is because, as I said earlier, I intend to look at all of the fees to see if there are opportunities to increase or reasonably increase the revenue. So that's why I did that math.
Okay, Ron, anything else? Dana, do you have any discussion on the T-PIR fees,
no.
Comments?
What Joe brought up also was the difference between the two piers as far as their shape. I don't know how that works as far as your actual usage. I think the usage, the lineal foot usage, that would be good to have that number. And if we're not quite making the electrical, then it seems like we could. It's really close, though.
Okay. Neil?
I guess we're all referring back to Joe here. In talking to the point of fishermen being punished for being at the T-Pier and there being a line and not enough slips, I'm not trying to go backwards with our revenues, but maybe a concept could be if rates were to go up that it wasn't on boats that were, they're not, I don't think you'd call them moored here, but this was their berth that they're from here, and they're fishermen that are here that are possibly in line or are just, they're going to be on the T-Pier forever because there's, or for a long term, I won't say that forever, guys, eventually you'll get there, but you know, something for a long-term plan instead of, you know, I know you said there was a 90-day plan before and that kind of disappeared, but maybe there could be a long-term plan from the T-Pier that the city's possibly okay with and that they're not necessarily going backwards on. But then for the other boats that are the transient boats that are truly passing through, maybe that rate goes up and is a little bit more commensurate with other harbors that are able to get a little bit more return on that true transient boat that might not be a commercial fishing boat or could be, but that is a boat that's on a real temporary basis. Just an idea.
Okay. Thanks, Neil. Lynn?
I'm sure, along with most of you, believe in 100% recovery as much as possible. And to find increases other than on the commercial slips would be, in my mind, the best way to get to 100% recovery, but that 100% be applied across the board. And maybe the best way, I don't know the best way to do that, a small increase on everything is kind of the easiest way to do it. Without trying to figure out exactly what is the appropriate rate for each of the categories that we have of service.
You know, one of the things that I was I want to comment on, Dave. You did a great article in the Bay News regarding the water and sewer rate increases that might be forthcoming in this new election. You laid out why it's going to happen. You laid out what we're going to do with it. And, you know, one of the things is, and I think Ron mentioned it so elegantly, and I thank you that you said we don't have to make final decisions tonight. I think this slip thing that we did with the fishermen, we needed to make some type of decision and comment so that we can make sure that they knew that they weren't going to get their rates increased 6.6%. Let me back up. I apologize. We haven't laid out in the harbor all the fees, all of our revenue, and what we're going to do with the money if we do increase these fees and try to capture it 100%, and maybe any improvements that we're going to make. We've heard from the audience. We have terrible bathrooms. We have no showers, laundry facilities, not really locked facilities. So maybe this is a more of a comprehensive looking at all these fees here in the harbor and what we're trying to accomplish. And I think maybe we could get there a little bit easier than maybe this piecemeal approach that we're trying to do tonight, you know, a little bit here and there. And okay, so why are we doing this? So I don't know. I like the way you laid that out, and maybe that's what we need to do is look at it more on a global scale of all the fees in the harbor. We're going to raise them this much, and if we so desire as the HAB, not taking into account any fees for the commercial fishermen, then so be it, and look at the other types of fees right now. So I don't know.
Bill?
Yes.
So just sort of refocus on where we are based on what you said. So on the T-piers, we're at essentially 100% recovery on,
right,
on the piers itself and on electric. We're like right there. And this isn't about sorting out the 1%. It's supporting, you know, it's figuring out the big pieces. So the only real question there is water. Because we're not charging for water, so and we can sort through that and come back to you. And then based on what I just heard you say, the most of the other ones, there's probably not. I've heard it, several of you say so for liveaboards, for city unmoorings, for those things, then recovering our full cost is appropriate. So the next three: private moorings, city unmoorings, and liveaboard fees, and launch ramp parking, all of those are either already being recovered 100%, or they might be a fairly easy decision for you.
Right.
And then it just leaves two that are not being recovered at 100% and you may want to consider, and that is the question of vessel assistance and the question on lease administration. But you might, if you wanted to consider just sort of saying it's the sense of the board that those other ones, private moorings, city-owned, liveaboards, and lunch ramp, those are all good. You're okay where they are. Then we could look at those last two pieces and be done with this, probably.
Okay.
If you don't mind me adding a couple things in, Bill.
Yes, Eric.
The list we have on the staff report is not every single fee line item. I've taken the major and most significant ones, just because the other ones are relatively small and insignificant, and it may be worthwhile because we're talking about, you know, well, what about looking at these things globally to see if there's an opportunity to get more revenue over here so we can provide more services. I'll run down 13 and 14, FYF 13, 14's actuals. I'll run through all of our line items. There's not that many on revenues, and you can see where all of our revenues come from. Again, this was our actuals received in 13, 14. Liveaboard services, I'm going to round these off. 4,700, other harbor services, and that's wharfage fee we get on unloading on the piers for the kelp guys, the South T Pier hoist, it's kind of a miscellaneous catch-all bucket, $11,000. Harbor leases, $1,653,000. North T Pier, $52,000. South T Pier, $67,000. Mooring rental, that's for the folks that own their own moorings and pay us the monthly fee, $85,000. Slip rental, that's for our commercial fishermen, $87,500. Slip transient sublease, $39,000. floating dockage rental, and that really isn't floating dockage rental anymore. It's because the sea lines are out there and they're not paying their bills. It's more anchorage fees, and I think that's another catch-all for another slip fee we've got in there. $1,800, special events, $500, and then other revenue, which is copies and I think maybe even showers and some other strange revenue sources, $5,000. So the little small things, like the South Keeper hoist and some other things, weren't included in there. Just because they're what I think fairly small potatoes and not anything I think we really need to look at in terms of a real revenue difference one way or another. They'll get adjusted with the annual CPI. Those are the big ones that I wanted to look at, and the slip fees, pier fees, mooring fees, and obviously our leases, which we can't touch in terms of adjusting those rates. Those are a negotiated rate. I thought that might be useful to bring that information so you see where we can get the bang for the buck, or to steal my boss's language here, where's the juice for the squeeze, and some of those squeezes aren't going to be getting very much juice out of them.
So with that in mind, and after your discussion, Dave, maybe we will look back on here and take it back to the audience and public comment on all the rest of the fees here, which would include the liveaboard, which would include anyone that's on the launch ramp fees, on vessel recovery fees, because I believe we really don't charge that. Does anyone have any comment in the audience on those subjects? Because this will be your last opportunity before we bring this to the board and probably make a recommendation to go in forth the city council.
Well, we will do that too after this.
Hi, I'm Denise Jacobson.
Yeah.
I am a liveaboard, a mooring owner in Morro Bay. I'm just here to say our fees, we do pay monthly fees. However, we really don't use a lot of the facilities. The bathrooms, I believe, are illegal right now. The showers, they all have cement floors that are illegal. They are so unsafe that as a woman, I would never use it. There's not even a full door, and it's just open to the public. So I really would have a hard time saying, gee, I think you ought to increase my fees. We don't use the water. We make our own water. Some of the liveaboards do use water, but again, very little of the facilities. I think what you could do is look at, other than charging people more, is maybe cutting back on some of the things that you do in the harbor. Again, towing boats for free. We now have somebody that does tow boats for a fee. Most harbors will use those first, make the people go to the person that's charging money before that they'll do it for free. There's a way to have income, and the parking. I think $5 a day is a pretty good deal to go fishing all day. Thank you.
Thank you. And yes, Gene was, we are going to bring back the T-Piers to the board and everything, but we wanted to give one last chance to the audience here to discuss any other types of fees. So as we bring this back, is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak before we end the fee schedule?
Hi, Wayne Moody, one more time. I'd like to speak to the vessel assistance. You know, we brag about this harbor and our harbor patrol all up and down the whole coast. We think, the fishermen think, and I really think that we have the best harbor patrol and the best harbor department. And I would hate to see us saddle the harbor department with having to charge vessels a fee for assistance, especially like it is right now, you know, one-time basis every month. Very few people use that, I think, but at least it's good public relations, I think. So hopefully we can leave that alone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joseph Conchellos, one more time. I want to talk about what Wayne just said there. I completely agree with Wayne. We have a fantastic harbor department. And I think if you guys are going to look at charging for any of the harbor department's assistance with towing or anything like that, I I have to agree with Wayne. I would hate to see them have to charge everybody to that needs assistance. I do think that something to look at, though, if it's something that needs to be done, is with the Coast Guard, there's something that happens where if you go out and you break down, you get towed in. If it's a breakdown that is unavoidable, you're fine. If it's something that was due to your own negligence, you didn't put fuel in the boat, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you can get charged. So I think that that's something good to look at there, you know. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Okay. Drew, did you have anything? I hear you getting up a couple times.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Drew Jacobson, live aboard, and I work on the bay. Not charging for tow-ins. That's been going on, and as I've said before in the past, the Harbor Department is a great Harbor Department. The Harbor Patrol officers are great Harbor Patrol officers, but we are looking at cutting back, and we are looking at gaining some monies for the city. There is a new towboat operator on the bay. He's Coast Guard licensed. He's endorsed for towing. He's trying to get the business going. And I'm not saying that he should handle emergency calls, but there are times when perhaps, as with most harbors and most marinas in California, you generally call out a towboat service if there's a problem on your boat. What I'm asking is that the Harbor Department perhaps work with this new towboat service, but he certainly right now can't provide all the services because he's new, he's single, but perhaps they could start moving some tows in his direction to get him up and running so the Harbor Department is not tasked for non-emergency calls like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Something to look at.
Yeah, you said something to look at there on that last comment. Shoving business that guy's way. Well, we might as well get rid of our $400,000 boat. We don't need it.
Thank you. Okay, with that, any other comment? Hearing none, I want to bring this back to the board. And, Gene, you had some comments on the T-Pier and what we discussed there.
Okay. Seeing how the cost recovery was so very close on the T-Piers, I can't think of a better public benefit than allowing the public to actually walk out over the top of a pier, look down at the commercial fishing boats, talk to them, or even fish off of the pier. I think it's a great public benefit. And I think that we do not need to change the fee schedule for the T-Pier.
Okay. Alan?
I tend to agree with Gene. The T-Pier is not much of a deal, really, for what you get. Going up and down the ladder, side tying, piles, some of which are broken, you run a risk of hanging up on them and damaging your boat. Certainly, the T-Pier fees are high enough for what you get, in my opinion.
Lynn?
We all have our favorite services, I guess you might say. And so maybe instead of talking about what we ought not to raise, each of us ought to give a suggestion on where we can raise revenue if revenues are truly needed for the city. And to bring us up to 100% recovery on across-the-board basis, I would like to hear some people make suggestions as to what they would like to see, where they would like to see the increases or where we could generate more funds. Ron has said that there might be other opportunities throughout looking at what we have here. I think there might be an opportunity in the vessel assistance. I don't know how many boats get towed every year by the Harbor Patrol. I don't know if Eric could give us a round figure there.
Non-emergency tows.
12,000
a year. Math's already been done. That we generate right now, or we
get 12,000 average 12,000 a year at $25. That's not a bad increase.
Are you suggesting, Mr. Buckingham, that there's 12,000 non-emergency tows executed in Morro Bay every year?
Not 12,000 tows. 12,000. So the fee is about $210, something like that, for those free tows. And Eric does about 2 free tows a week.
Thank you. Thank you.
What?
What's the cost to the city per tow? $210?
The charge is $252 per hour.
Okay.
So if each free tow, and we currently give 1 free tow every 6 months.
Yeah, and I'll add, we rarely, if ever, have charged for towing.
Right.
There's very few people that get towed over and over and over again that would get past that one per
every 6 months,
every once in a while.
I got a little confused here. Some numbers got thrown around real fast. So did you say there was 2 tows a week that you charge for? So
no, we do about 2, and some weeks it's 0, some weeks it's maybe 3 or 4.
So 2 tows a week.
About average. 2 tows, non-emergency tows per week.
Okay. And then
I would have thought more.
So right now you get a free tow every 6 months.
Right.
And because of that, as Eric just said, we hardly ever charge for a tow because rarely does somebody come twice in a 6 month period looking for a free tow. So if he started charging for those what are currently free tows, that would be $12,000. Or what would happen is those people would go to this new business in Merrill Bay, and that $12,000 would go to support a new business.
And do we know what his pace or his fee scale is? It'd be interesting.
So he doesn't have to be registered with the harbor or the city? I mean, to operate in the bay?
He's got to be Coast Guard licensed and have all the insurance and everything else. He's just in a slip. No, he's not operating as a sublease anywhere.
Okay.
He's running a private slip.
So he does outside the harbor tows also?
As far as I know, I don't know to what distance or degree he'll go. I don't know if he's an official vessel assist or towboat U.S. guy yet or not. I know he's working in that direction. He wants to be.
Okay.
I think Ron.
Ron, do you have anything to say? What I'd like to maybe get a consensus here from the board, or at least, is I see, as Dave stated here, the T-piers, the slips, and as Lynn said, we don't want to touch any of these things, but we'd like to have 100% recovery in the harbor enterprise zone. Well, my suggestion here is that, is there ways on the lease fees, as you say, you want to raise those, the vehicle assistance, you know, some of these other fees, the parking, we talked about that, Eric, and you were actually going to do that, or we were considering it. So is there a possibility that we can sit down and look at this on a more global scale to come up with a little bit more of 100%, or at least try to get to that figure?
Yeah, we can. I mean, obviously you're going to have to go at some point fee by fee, and one
right.
each
no,
one and consider it,
right,
and figure out if there's any room for any improvement anywhere in terms of raising any fees. You know, again, we're slip fees. We pretty much dealt with T-Pier. I think we're done with, but not quite sure. We're at 91-98% recovery, pretty close on that. Are we okay with that in general?
Right.
I heard discussion of do we want to have a different rate like we do for our slips with the piers in terms of recreational boats. You know, a higher rate for recreational boats versus commercial boats. What the percentage is right today, I don't know, we're probably 80%, 90% commercial, and maybe 10% recreational.
So if we're almost meeting the cost recovery, and if we make a differentiation between recreational and commercial, we might get to the 100% on the TP here, right, with that, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
So I think if we can tweak some of these fees and differentiate between commercial and recreational, which, as has been discussed here tonight, recreational doesn't offer as much of a public benefit. So according to the philosophy that we as a city can do is offer not the 100% cost recovery and justify that very elegantly. And so we just need to look at some of these fees and tweak it and maybe bring it back to the next board meeting before, you know, we just all of a sudden here just say, okay, we're not going to raise this fee and this fee and that's my thoughts. Ron? Dana?
Yeah, this kind of goes into other things that we've been discussing quite a bit lately, and that's the haul-out, the marine facility, and a possible revenue would be just boat storage across the street where we're thinking of parking cars for free. We could actually charge people for their boats to be sitting there, and, I mean, pretty good fees. There's already some boats sitting there, but I don't think those ones are going to pay anything. but that's just another thought, a way to create some more revenue. And
right.
I think pretty good revenue for considering the cost of what you would need facility-wise for it.
Ron?
We've been talking about this for a really long time tonight, and I don't see us coming to any particular resolution right now, although there seems to be a consensus or at least a majority of the board endorses the idea of seeing what can be a further study. I mean, I hate doing that. I mean, it's done. And it looks like kicking the can down the road, but I don't think so. I'd like to encourage the HAB to work with the Harbor Department over the next 30 days or 20 some days, whenever you have to renotice for the next meeting, and put back on the agenda what opportunities were identified, if any, to achieve a little more cost recovery than we're currently doing from any revenue source, any Harbor Service revenue related source. I don't think it needs a motion. Do whatever. But you know, I can't do any more with this tonight.
You're done. Okay. I kind of concur.
And that's fine. And as Dave spoke earlier, you know, we're master fees coming up here sometime in July, and we're trying to get there. We've got some time to work with it. We're not. If we've got to kick the can down the road a little further, that's not the end of the world. We can bring back maybe some other ideas with other revenue generation, and if you're looking for some more recommendations and a more global look at this, we're happy to do that, and we can do that. We've looked at slip fees. I mean, that was the big one, obviously, that generates the most interest, and we've put that one to bed. T-piers, I think we're close, but we can bring that back as well with a little more analysis, and that's totally acceptable to me.
All right, Dave, you have something?
Yeah, like Ron, I'm 98% done, which is pretty close to cost recovery. But I would enjoy just a quick sense of the council, whether it's just sort of you think it needs a lot more study on the last one, because we're in budget time right now. So the last subject there is lease administration. This isn't boats in the water and stuff. It's how much it costs us to go through the process of leases. We're currently at about 58% cost recovery. So just briefly, what that means is, what this is all about, this it costs somebody time to do this. So every time I sit in one of these lease deals with Eric and the council, our city attorney is there, and he's on the clock. And so is it your sense that that we should be subsidizing lease administration by 40%, or is there your sense that those businesses should generally be bearing the cost of renewing those leases, or your sense that you really don't want to think about it anymore?
I can actually make a comment. I think we should recover at least 100% cost in lease management. I can forcefully say that right now. Ron?
Before I can answer that question, I would need to know what mechanism or mechanisms are available for recovery. If I'm a leaseholder and I'm in negotiations with you, which I presume is where the costs come, or are you talking about also administering the lease, administering the standing lease as well? Because there's two separate issues, right?
No, not administering standing leases, you know, working with leaseholders as we go through the times. No, it's actions on leases, basically, a new master lease approval.
Okay, so what mechanism or mechanisms are available to recover costs for actions on leases?
This is it. It's a master fee. If it's time to renew your lease, you've got a lease, it's time to renew it, we negotiate it, we get it to council, we do all that, there's a cost to that.
Okay, and it's
you're a master leaseholder and you've got five subunits that you're subleasing, and the new sublessee comes in and we have to process that, there's a cost to that. It's strictly that.
And right now it's set at $1,000. Flat.
For the master lease approval, flat fee, regardless of whether it takes me 2 hours, and some leases have taken me 2 hours, and some leases have taken me 200 hours. It's not an hour by the hour basis. It's an estimate of a time to process, just like the permit fees with planning and building. When somebody goes in to build a house, they estimate about this many hours to process that. Some of them go easy because the applicants know the process and it gets through and they get good submissions. Some of them take forever because they're takes forever. It's an average.
I thought they went off percentage of the cost of the project.
That could be on some of those building fees. But with these lease fees, it's just strictly a time element of staff to get the job done, an estimate of an average time element.
And is $1,000 over a period of a year's time? The city is telling us that $1,000 per is basically about 50% recovery.
$1,000 for me to and my staff to take a master lease that's expired, to negotiate a new lease and get it to council and get it approved and get it signed off. It's a one-time, it's not an ongoing thing. It takes me a year. I mean, it might take me a year to do over time, but the time I put into it is roughly we're at about a 50% recovery cost on that.
And that lease lasts usually for 40 years.
I understand that. But is it not also the case that there is a variety of values to those leases? Some leases are worth more than
some
others.
Some leases are worth more. Some
to the operator?
Some less. There's...
And the reason
there's not
I,
a big
and
difference.
The reason I ask the question is it reasonable then to have a flat rate?
I think so. If I'm negotiating with, let's say, the Juju restaurant, which was the old Whale's Tail, the Roca's, there next to the Anchor Memorial Park, that's, I think, our smallest lease site. If I'm negotiating and executing a master lease for that leaseholder versus Stan Marina Square, a whole block, the lease itself is, to get through it, isn't going to change that much for the size of the lease site or the value of the lease site.
So as a recent participant in this situation here, I'll be totally honest with everybody. We had an assignment, our assumption, so we didn't have a new lease drafted. We took over the previous lease at 1287 Embarcadero, which was M&M Refrigeration. So we had to pay $500 to have the city draft that for us. That was to pay them to do their side. So then I paid my attorney $4,500 to do his side. And so for a month we sent emails back and forth, all of which I paid for my attorney. And now that was essentially the way I look at it, is that I paid $4,500 plus this $500 to now go into, it's not really going into business with the city, but now I continually pay the city. That bought me the right to now continue to pay rent to the city. So I don't feel like the payments don't stop, but I'm just saying that it's a little bit more than just that $500 when you do enter into this for the other side, for the leaseholder. So if all the fees were put on to the person buying it, and whether it be the brand new spot or the oldest spot, I happen to possibly have the oldest spot, you know, that I know that the land, the water lease appraises for the same values. There's a water-based price and there's a land-based price, and that's what Eric, I think, is saying, is they're consistent, and that's what the city gets their lease rent from. The value of the building is separate. So I'd like to add that it's a little bit, it's not so black and white. There's some other elements for the, if we're encouraging business, that's kind of a generic way to put it, but in order for me to do business with the city, it costs me more than the $500 that's right there.
Well, I think, too, what we're asking for is there's what, 30 lease sites? So at the end, if the leases are 40 to 50 years, and we're only saying a flat fee of $2,000, I mean, this isn't going to come up all the time. I mean, so...
No, it's not all the time. Subleases are more often. Assignments and assumptions, not so much. And the 500, three fees for the lease administration. Master lease approval, brand new lease, we're going to negotiate it. Council approved lease actions. Those are things that I have to take to the city council. They usually take a resolution. On some of our older leases, which are going away, this is the old format, we had to go to the council for sublease approval. We don't do that anymore. That takes more staff time. That takes more city attorney time. That takes city council time, city administrator time. The next one down, 175 for administratively approved lease actions. That's primarily subleases. There's a couple other things that we can do in-house. We don't have to generally get the city attorney involved, not the city council. I don't have to write staff reports and spend all that time. So that one, that's why that one is at a much lower level. So different levels of basically it's city time, staff time to execute the deed.
So, Dave, you'd like us to have some type of recommendation on this particular action tonight. Is that correct?
That would have been great, but we don't need to go there.
All right, Neil?
I was going to say, I put those comments out there not necessarily to say that I want the city to stay at a loss on their time on this. I got distracted by my thought here. I don't know. I think what? Yeah, I just wanted to let you guys know, essentially, but I understand that there's more to the city. I'm not saying that I'm necessarily against increasing that rate. I just think that it needs to be considered.
Okay, do we need a motion here? Is there any other discussion? Yes, Alan.
It's not about the lease. Okay. Maybe I missed it, but I never did hear what the overall subsidy level was for the entire harbor, however you term it. I mean,
enterprise.
How far are we off from being, what percentage is the entire harbor enterprise zone subsidized? Is that number available?
I don't think that number exists. We've got a balanced budget. We make as much as we spend. We don't sock away enough for all of our capital needs, which is our big ticket items. We take them as we're able to afford them. So that's a current evaluation that we are doing right now, is looking at all of our capital needs over the longer term, over, you know, longer than just next year. What are we going to fix? It's trying to scope out over the longer term, and you know, that's one of the reasons we're looking at these fees, because it's our excess of revenues that goes into our accumulation fund that pays for all this stuff.
So it could be argued from one perspective that in fact the budget is not balanced.
The operating budget is balanced.
I appreciate that the operating budget is balanced. I appreciate that, but you made a really strong point just now, and you said that, you know, the capital budget, if you will, which we'll get to later on is not balanced.
Horribly out of balance in our city. And that's so I'll go back to my opening monologue. That's exactly why we're sitting here.
Right.
So we've done over years what's called cash-based budgeting. Figure out how much money we're going to take in and divvy it out. We are just starting to do requirements-based budgeting, which is figure out how much it actually costs to run the place based on the real requirements, and then see how much we're missing.
Right.
So choosing just four small areas of the city, capital replacement, streets, police and fire, and only operations, personnel and police and fire, not equipment, we are currently we're upside down by 25%. So we need at least $15 million a year in the general fund, and we only take in 12. So your point is exactly right, Ron. When we look at the city more as a business and say, you know, if we fund depreciation, if we wanted our streets to be at a reasonable level, then we're horribly out of whack, as is, and Harbor would be too. Once we do the math and figure out how much we need to be spending to replace that really badly rutted road between Santa Maria Seafood and where you wind around in there, and how it's going to collapse probably someday because, what is it, a garbage dump underneath? We haven't done that math, but once we did, we would see that and if we applied, Alan, that to what's our cost recovery versus the requirement to keep the harbor in decent shape over the next 50 years, then we'd find that we need to be raising more revenue, and hopefully not by fees, but by having great businesses, drawing lots of people, spending lots of money on the harbor. Because as Eric said, the business end of the harbor is by far the most, the highest revenue producing end of the harbor. It's not, you know, mooring balls or liveaboards.
Well, if I could go on, that number interests me. I'd like to have you guys figure that number out.
Well, what I think we need to do is we need to end this somehow or other, and we need to bring it back in the next meeting.
Don't exist down here?
No. I'm sorry, Gene.
Well, we're talking about lease fee.
Right.
Okay. As I think Neil brought up, the new leasee is negotiating with the city to give the city more money. That's the cost of business, as far as I'm concerned, with the Harbor Department. And they are going to receive more money, new businesses, more people coming in, and they are going to be recovering that money. If it costs them $500, they're making money on that $1,000. If it costs them $10,000, they're still going to be recovering that money because they're increasing a new use on that lease. So that's my feeling.
So do we have any other comments or a motion to table this, kick it down the table, as Ron, I think that was your term, and bring it back and maybe tweak a couple fees? Is everyone looking at, maybe I can work with Eric on maybe parking in the down there at the launching ramp? Is that something that we want to even look at and bring back? No? Ron?
I think the administration of the lease fees is sort of a separate animal, and I'm prepared to make a compromise motion between the two positions that have been expressed, which are essentially 100% cost recovery and then less than 100% cost recovery for a variety of perfectly sound reasons. So I'll move that the Harbor Advisory Board recommended the City Council that the current fees for lease administration be increased 50%.
I'll second it. I have a first and second. Do we have any discussion? Gene? Alan?
Uh, 50% doesn't sound like a compromise. It sounds like full cost recovery.
Well, according to the city manager, it's not full cost recovery. According to the city manager, it would have to be 100% increase to be full cost recovery.
Oh, okay. Stand corrected.
That's not, so we got three categories there. The master fee, master lease, we're at 1,000. Full recovery, 2,000. Next one down, we're at 500. Full recovery, 640. That's not double, if my math is right. Next one down, 175 is what we're at, 240. So
we have a first and second.
It's only the first one that said half.
Right. So, Lynn?
From current levels.
To increase them 50%
That's correct.
Of what they currently are, not to add 50% to them. That's right.
So roughly halfway.
Okay.
Neil?
Dana? Ron? Okay, we have a motion on the table. I hear no discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
So I believe we have four yes and three no. Is that correct?
Who's the third no?
Motion passes.
One, two.
Neil?
I was a
no.
Nay.
Oh, you were a no. Okay.
No, no. Yes, 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 yes. Okay, so I think we have had a lot of discussion tonight. I mean, maybe we didn't get it all done, but I'd like to end this a little bit and get to the Maritime Museum, who's been sitting here a little bit. So do I need to make a motion to end this discussion, Eric, and we can work on it and maybe bring it back the next meeting?
If you want to table it and bring it back, unless my boss tells me otherwise, I don't think we need a motion to table, do we?
Okay.
Nope.
All right. So with that, I think we'd like to bring Larry up with the Maritime Museum, and he can share with us his proposal. Is that correct, Eric, or do you want to discuss this a little bit first?
Yeah, let me do a quick run through my staff report here. Thanks for that, and then if there's any public comment, although I think our presenters will be our public comment. So as you know, the Central Coast Maritime Museum Association has been working for a number of years to try and establish an actual museum instead of a collection of stuff spread all over town. We've got a current MOU with them that allows them to display a couple boats and stipulates a few things. We've got council okay to change that agreement. Got that last year to update it to get three boats out there. The Maritime Museum's come forward with a new proposal. Kind of in conjunction with us acquiring the Triangle lot, they've got a proposal to move their boats out of the existing parking area. We've got it up on the screen there now, where they are now, over into the dirt area between the Triangle lot and our Front Street paved parking lot, close off one of the driveways into the driveway into the Triangle lot, and open up a new drive from the Front Street lot on through, and do some nice improvements in that mostly dirt and eucalyptus tree and rock and fenced-in cyclone fence area. Build a small 20 by 20 building, some outdoor display areas, increase their kiosks. They've got one. They want to put two more in. They'll not only have Maritime Museum-related things, but other maritime-related things of other groups that they may want to put in. Some botanical areas, some xeriscape landscaping, so we're not taking up any more water, picnic tables, and really improving the areas in between those two parking lots. And then they'll bring out the Tug Alma, which is currently out in our yard at the end of the dirt road, so we'll get those three boats on display, and then bring the submarine over and put it on the trailer that's currently back out by the power plant in the back corner of that lot. And reestablish those 12 parking spaces. So some of the flat work is going to be done by the city. The Maritime Museum is going to do the majority of the heavy lifting with building the building and doing a lot of improvements. We'll be working with them towards those improvements. So what we're looking for tonight from the Harbor Advisory Board, and we'll get some input from Larry and the Maritime Museum here, what we're looking for from the Advisory Board is just some general input on the idea and concept and what do you think about it. Nothing is going to be permanent here. Most of the hardscaping is going to be in pavers, so things can be moved. They have taken into account that a boatyard may someday exist in the Triangle lot, so there's enough space in the drive between the two lots to get a travel lift through there if that ever comes to pass. And again, some curb and gutter work, which is removable if things need to be rearranged in the future for that lot to be used as a boatyard if we end up getting in that going in that direction in the future. With that, Larry, you guys have anything you want to add?
As Larry comes up here, I'll just add from the broader city perspective, we do want to be able to, at least in the near term, make use of the triangle lot for parking. And the current setup of those two driveways is not safe. So having the current driveway where you see that would be the northern one where you see the boat sitting, the one that goes in and out of the triangle lot and is at the locked gate right now, having that active at the same time as the current driveway that goes in and out of the Frankie and Lola's lot, that just traffic safety-wise, that's not a safe setup. So the idea here was to, and I'll let Larry take it from here, but the idea was to restructure the area, I'd say moderately, to make it safer. So there would be one driveway going in and out of the parking lot, and then a connector that would be boat lift capable, connecting the existing lot to the triangle lot, so that we gain access to the triangle lot, be able to use it in the near term for parking, in the long term for either parking or boatyard, but in either case have a safer and frankly sightlier area than currently is.
Well, thank you, Dave and Eric. Larry Newland, I'm the director of the Maritime Museum Association, and so I think that they've done a good job explaining what we're talking about. That plan has been tweaked a little bit. I have the revised version here. Eric didn't get it in time for a staff report. There aren't very many changes except that shows a 16 by 20 building, and we're talking about a 20 by 20 building, which, for reference, is a little bit smaller than a two-car garage. But I promise you it'll be a lot more attractive than a two-car garage. We have an architect working on it right now, trying to incorporate some of Jim Mall's design details in the original building. So we don't have that yet, but it's forthcoming. The idea here was to kind of take advantage of a heretofore underutilized piece of property, somewhat blighted, and take advantage of the fact that the city is about ready to take site control over the so-called triangle lot. I was down there on President's Day, and I was doing some work and by the sub, and I saw people driving around in circles, and I was pointing to that lot, telling them, you know, you can park in there, and they were going, oh, gee, kind of hand-wringing. I don't know if I want to go in there. Well, there's a sign right there. It says it's a P for parking. It's intimidating to go use it. So they see that Navy trailer and that heavy equipment and the barbed wire and a power plant looming behind it, so nobody uses it. But it's over 2 acres, so I'm pretty confident that with that opening, the so-called parking situation on the waterfront will dissolve immediately. But beyond that, we thought that it would be a nice city attraction to have this kind of thematic maritime park. We talked about adding two more information kiosks, just like the one that we have. And our idea was that the one that was towards the eastern end, sort of the bottom of the picture as you see there, we would turn over to maybe some other groups. And I don't know who that might be. There's the Morro Bay Historic Society. There's the folks, the Morro Bay and Bloom folks, which we were probably going to work with for some of the landscaping things. The fishermen's associations, the Native American folks, if they can get organized enough to work with us to put some kind of a display, we'd be happy to work with them. There are large archaeological sites and ancient villages just beyond there. Anybody who's lived around here long enough to know that when the PG&E started building there in the early 50s, they uncovered huge villages just beyond, right behind this building in that big lot right there. So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of moving parts. Most of it is maritime related, but we thought it would be a focal point for the waterfront and kind of start a genesis for the mid-waterfront to kind of improve both from a cultural resource and standpoint, a recreational component to it with the picnic tables, a place to hang out, leisure. I don't know if you can call it a picnic area, but it's just sort of a place for casual gathering. And it adds pedestrian connectivity because we do, if you look at the I don't know how well you can see the drawing up there, but next to the building, there's a pad with a pathway that goes to the lot. And our thinking was that if people were parking in the lot, and they had a stroller or something, they wouldn't have to walk through the driveway and compete with cars coming and going on a busy 4th of July weekend or something. There would be a defined path for them that they'd be going right by the submarine. I don't know what else I can add to it. We think that we can build the building for about $35,000, the shell. We don't have all of that money on hand, but we think we can get it pretty fast. So as part of this process, we are also working with the city to renew our license agreement, which we have right now. We actually have an encroachment permit, but we're going to change it to a license agreement that allows us to display this. And we do insure the city. We insure ourselves where we have the same policy that the Harbor Festival has. We indemnify the city for $1 million. So we pay for that. We paid for this. So we have some skin in the game. We put a lot of our own money into it that we get from other people who give us money. We're a 501c3. This is totally for the benefit of the community, and we're excited about it. And we think you should be too. And so what questions do you have for me?
Larry, one question I have. What exactly would be the permanent structure of the 20 by 20? What will it enclose? Will you have information on, are you going to charge for it? I mean, so what exactly is that building going to be?
Good question.
Or do you know yet?
We have ideas about it. Thematically, on the inside, when you're talking about maritime history of, Central California, which is our focus, but it's not just Central California, we'd obviously have a big section on the abalone industry that was in Morro Bay for so long. Morro Bay was sort of ground zero for between 1945 and about 1970 for abalone, probably in the world, and commercial fishing. There would probably be a large display about the Montebello incident. The Alma, as you probably know, is part of that, and the Alma is eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. I have a couple of Cal Poly students that have been working on that, and that would be the only thing in Morro Bay that would get on the National Register except for Morro Rock. I think Morro Rock's on the National Register. So that's kind of a coup for the community to have a National Register property. And on the Montebello issue, there's a large display in the San Diego Maritime Museum, and I've been down there working with them about the San Salvador visit, which is another topic. But they have one of the torpedoes that was fired at the Montebello that grounded out, and there was a fisherman in Morro Bay years ago named Pete Burton, and you may remember him. He was an elderly gentleman when I was 10, and he had a drag boat, and he was my next-door neighbor. But he pulled one of the torpedoes, says Mitsubishi right on it, and it's a carcass of it, and he gave it to the San Diego Maritime Museum. They have that in a case with a large builder's model of the Montebello above it, and I was walking by it with one of the folks down there. I said, well, that's what we want. And she said, what? I said, we want a model. She said, why don't you just take that? Take the whole thing. And I said, she goes, well, I don't even know what it's doing here. It's got nothing to do with, look around. It's got nothing to do with San Diego. It's just been here for a long time. She said, don't be afraid to ask for what you want. And I thought, I'd ask for it right now if I had a place to put it besides my living room. And so that's the kind of stuff that we think we can have. And speaking of my living room, I have one room in my house that's fenced off that looks like America's attic. And then we have a storage shed. And then we have other board members that have stuff stuck in. So my wife implores you, please help us get this stuff out of our home so we have a permanent place for this. So thematically, the World War II part of it, the Montebello, the commercial fishing, the building converting a natural estuary into a harbor, and that's the part we'll probably work with the Morro Bay Historic Society. They have a lot of information about that, working with the Army Corps of Engineers, talking about turning the terrestrial waterfront, making the terrestrial waterfront what it is now. A lot of people don't know that where the submarine is, that was a mud flat, and the Navy did that and the Army Corps of Engineers. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and probably these exhibits will rotate somewhat, and it probably would be free. And we probably would be, our operational plan would be open on the weekends and holidays and by appointment. Another, we thought we would reach out and try to get on the curriculum and the circuit for when the kids talk about, the fourth graders talk about California history and go to the missions. We would get on that loop and they would come by here as well, and probably would work something in some kind of synchronicity with the lighthouses, both at Piedras and the Point San Luis. So there's a lot of opportunities, but we don't have a specific operational plan yet, but we kind of know where we're going.
So if the public here that's listening would like to donate or help you on a monetary value, do you have a website, or is there a way for them to do that, Larry?
We do have a website, and you can go on there and get on our mailing list. Some of you may have gotten our recent email blasts. We're pretty easy to get a hold of. The website's checked every day. We're trying to work on building our Facebook page. We do have a Facebook link, but it's not very effective yet. This is, again, we all have full-time jobs. This is something we do on the side. We do want to build our board this year, so we're looking for people who can bring value, if you know somebody out there. We work with a lot of local providers. Dana has helped us a lot, and we have the engineer that's doing this donating a lot of his time. Jim Mall donated hours, hundreds of hours over the years. So this is kind of, I liken it to kind of one of those Amish barn raising kind of styles. It's a community event and a community project and something the community can be able to be proud of and add to more of a sense of place, a compelling sense of place.
I appreciate your efforts and your perseverance, because I think when I came here in Morro Bay in 99, I met you, and you were a one-man band and probably still are to a certain extent, but with a lot more help now. And I think your dreams have become a vision, and hopefully these visions will become reality. So I commend you, Larry.
Thank you.
So do we have any discussion or any comments to Larry about his plans? Gene?
Yeah, Larry, on the driveway that's going into the Triangle parking lot, how wide is that?
It's 24 feet now.
I see.
And we had discussions about what a travel lift would be that can haul a multi-haul.
That's
so you
my
pick,
question.
Figure a 23-foot, 24-foot multi-haul.
You need 35 feet, sir.
Okay, so what my thought was, the curb on the right, which is sort of the east side, originally, I had that painted so that the travel lift could off track. Or what we could do is what I work for Caltrans and a lot of engineering terms, but we use what's called E-curb or mountable type curb. You could make it out of concrete and make it mountable so that a large travel lift, because they turn like a skid steer.
35 foot turning radius, so, and you can't lift a wheel.
So. I think surmounting the ingress-egress of a travel lift is a relatively minor engineering and design issue. If worse come to worse, you could even relocate the driveway where it says stop and put that down where the submarine is if you were coming directly across the street, which would even out your turning radius. But right now that shows 24 feet. A standard lane on a freeway is 12 feet, so two 12-foot lanes. But it could easily be made 30 or 35. You have 35 up to the drip line of that tree, roughly. And that's 1 inch equals 10 feet on the plan. Well, I have the plan here. So it's been surveyed to a tenth of a foot. So we have pretty good engineering so far.
Okay, Alan, do you have any questions for Larry here?
I was curious. I looked at the maps, but even though I'm a civil engineer, I was having trouble. I don't know why, but how much of your project is in the triangle lot?
That pad behind the building, that rectangle, that's technically just on the other side of the chain link fence,
okay,
like by 6 inches. And that pad is going to be about 13 by 50. To accommodate the large trailer that's in the back parking lot. And that trailer is larger than we need it. It's got a Jeep dolly on the front of it, which we're trying to negotiate with the Navy in Washington, D.C. to sell it. And it's, as you can imagine, that's a pretty complicated thing. But we don't need the Jeep dolly because the submarine weighs 44,000 pounds and it weighed 80,000 when it was operational. So we want to get rid of it and put the submarine on the trailer, which is about 50 feet long, the same length as the sub, and put it on that pad that you see there. And it's an AC pad.
So that's the only part of the project.
That's the only part that encroaches into the existing triangle lot that's on that plan.
Okay, Lynn?
So I have no questions except for I applaud you. And I think this is, again, we talk about revenue-enhancing activities on the harbor and in the harbor, and I think this is a wonderful first step. And so I thank you for your perseverance. Neil?
I think we asked what your website was, but I didn't actually hear the website.
It's morrobaymaritime.org, morrobaymaritime, one word, .org. If you just Google Morrobay Maritime Museum, it'll come up. If you Google DSRV Avalon, it'll come up. That submarine, I have a friend who says it's the second most photographed thing in Morro Bay, outside of the Rock. And we recently hosted, last fall, the engineers and scientists who worked at Lockheed Space and Missile and developed that. And they were all like in their 80s and 90s. And they were here for 2 and 3 days, and they all stayed in hotels, spent a lot of money. Their grandkids came and climbed through it. And it was a really great event. We had pretty good cooperation from like Dorn's restaurant and so forth. But it's an example of how there's kind of spin-off benefits from something like this. And I think, Bill, you were talking about that. It has sort of tangential benefits for the economy.
Neil?
We're just on questions right now, or full comment, right? Yeah, no more questions. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Dana?
I am just mostly concerned about the travel lift possibilities coming in and out of here and that need for 35 feet. Exerscape Island, can you explain that a little bit more to me? I'm a little...
So are you...
Is there a curb right there?
The one on the west or the...
West side of the entrance.
Under the tree?
Well, that tree is going to be taken out. The yuke tree, it's going to be removed. And there'll be an island there, a little peninsula, with a concrete curb. When you put pavers in, you have to have a good strong header, and so you have to lock those in, especially if you're going to have a structural section that can take the weight of a large vehicle. So that's what we were thinking. But that's modifiable. You know, it's 1 inch equals 10. So
I just want to make sure we got that clearance. Otherwise, everything's fantastic. You know, I'm a huge supporter of you guys.
Oh, I know.
So glad to see this finally coming about. Okay.
As you also make think about pavers or get concerned or wonder what's going on there, the city's ready to execute on the flatscape piece of this thing very quickly, and we can do all of this without a coastal development permit if we use pavers. So it's not to say that if we put a boatyard in there. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of reorienting that would need to be done from vicinity of the South T Pier through the parking lot, over the Embarcadero, into that parking lot somehow. That would have to be planned out if we put a boatyard in there. So pulling pavers out at that point and paving or making sure that there's stability for a boat lift would be a minor part of making sure access from a haul out into a future boatyard is viable.
If I could add one thing, we like the idea of a boatyard right next to our museum. In fact, we want that. In fact, the closer the better. So just for the record.
Okay. Dana, anything else?
No. I'm just really happy to see this moving forward. Thank you.
Ron?
In terms of the boatyard connector, I like that phrase, Mr. Buckingham. In addition to the 35-foot width to accommodate a hypothetical 75 metric ton travel lift, there's also going to be 53,000 pound point load on each wheel.
Okay. Well, I don't see any opposition to this, but I think what we'd like to do is anyone have a motion to
Do we need a motion here, Eric? I believe we do. Or a recommendation? I
mean, we're looking for input on the overall thing. If you want to make a motion to support it, by all means, there's no reason not to.
Do I hear a motion here? Or does anyone have? Dana?
Yes, I move that we recommend that the proposal from the Central Coast Maritime placement and parking area go on as proposed to the city.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
I have a first and second. Do I have any discussion?
With that proposal, is that under the assumption that that modification from 24 feet to at least 35 feet be made?
Correct. I think Larry pretty well stated that that was something that they could do. So I assume that would be in part of it.
Do you have any objections to that, Larry?
I think what I would just like to say to that is, as you stated before, there's going to be significant work that needs to be done for a connector. We may not put it in at this point at 35 because it'll be more aesthetically appropriate and two-way traffic appropriate to put it in as two lanes now, but we won't do anything that would prevent us from going in later and expanding it because we don't know where that connector is going to go eventually.
Okay. I'm good with that.
Yeah, because basically all that would have to be torn up anyway because you'd have to put in a heavy, heavy pad for the loads. Okay.
I'm good. All right. Here, seeing no discussion, all in favor of the proposal for Larry here on the Maritime Museum, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstain? Seeing none? Larry, thank you very much. Thank you for waiting around, too. Okay, the next item on our agenda tonight would be public hearings, reports, and appearances. The Harbor Department, no, actually, I'm sorry. Unfinished business is the C1, update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on the committee recent activities, findings, and recommendations. Ron, do you have anything to report or to discuss tonight?
Well, I have a report and then a recommendation. When the board satisfied with the report, the Harbor Advisory Board directed its ad hoc committee at the last meeting to establish a set of draft site criteria for Morro Bay Boatyard and Haul Off Facility, and the committee did that work and has distributed to the Harbor Advisory Board and to the Harbor Department a draft set of criteria dated May 5th, 2015. We were introduced at the special meeting, at the Harbor Advisory Board's special meeting recently, we were introduced to Mr. Andy Killian, Ventura, California. Mr. Killian is a past boatyard operator, and we reached out to Mr. Killian, sent the draft list to him, asked him for his input. In terms of an operator, he was kind enough to respond, and his notes are added to the list, and attribution is pointed out, is given to him in that list. So I presume the board has the draft criteria?
I do.
Okay. So any questions from the board relative to the draft criteria?
Gene? Alan?
Nope.
Lynn? I have none. I think it was a well thought out, well done job, Ron. Neil? Dana? Okay. So what's our next step here, Ron?
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
Move that the Harbor Advisory Board, Polly, I have a copy of this. I'll hand you. Move that the Harbor Advisory Board accept the ad hoc committee's draft site criteria for Morro Bay Boatyard and Haul Off Facility. Further, that the Harbor Advisory Board recommend to the City Council that in the very near future, the city apply those site criteria to identifying and committing planning activities to a Morro Bay boatyard site, the most likely of which, after looking over the alternatives, is the triangle lot immediately to the south of the Dynergy plant and immediately north of the existing paved lot on the east side of Embarcadero.
I would like to second that.
I have a first and second. Any discussion here? Gene? Alan?
Well done, Ron.
I had a lot of help.
Lynn? I have none either. I think it's well thought out and well done, Ron. Neil?
None.
Dana?
Good job, Ron.
Thanks.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table here, and we have a second. Hearing no discussions, I'd like to call for a vote on accepting the draft site criteria that the ad hoc committee came up with and giving it to the city council for consideration. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Any abstain? None? Motion passes. So this will be given to the city council. Eric, how will this work?
Yeah, I'll probably draft up some sort of a memo to council and work with my city manager here and figure out what our next steps are in terms of getting this in front of the council and what we're asking of them. It is a city goal, as you know.
Right.
As we last have meeting, wanted, without a site, to really start rallying around what's the point of moving any further. So I think we've gotten past the HAB recommendation of that, and we'll bring it to the council and see where they go with it.
Well, I think that, tonight we at least Mr. Buckingham here has given us some indication that if this thing all goes forward, he at least is seriously looking at the boatyard haul-out and storage facility being in that area over there, at least as a consideration. So I'm assured that the city and the city council will give this a due course because, as I say, I don't know, Dave, we've been talking about this since 1999, and I think if we pass on this opportunity, you talk about revenue-enhancing, things. I think we have to do it now or it's just not going to get done. We're just not going to have a boat haul-out facility or any type of storage facility. It would be nice to have it maybe over in Coleman, as we discussed, but this looks like one of the few sites that we are able to control right now and put through. So thank you very much.
If I can just say one or two things on that, I'll let you know what our thinking is, my thinking is the Triangle Lot is a very logical place for a boatyard. It's also an ideal place for parking. And so there's a friction there, and I'm not sure that they're mutually exclusive. We're looking at a whole bunch of things in the city, as you can well expect. One of them being that we'll probably we're going to definitely come and bring to you for some input, since it's on the harbor side of the Embarcadero, is the potential of expanding the sidewalk on the bay side of the Embarcadero out, essentially take away all of the parking spaces along that side, expand the sidewalk out 8 feet, so you would have a 12-foot promenade along the Embarcadero instead of that narrow 5-foot thing. Each of you, I'm sure, has seen a visitor pushing her baby carriage down the street because there's no space on the Embarcadero sidewalk to push a baby carriage when there's people on the sidewalks. That's something that we're considering. We're doing some graphic design of. We'll bring to planning and to you and to PWAB and the public for input. But as we look at something like potentially losing some parking, Coastal want us to replace that parking. So the Triangle Lot is a good space for a boatyard. It's a good space for free parking. Are there other potential space? I think that, frankly, maybe the best place for a boatyard would be in and around the tank farm But unfortunately, it's owned by Dynegy right now. So, and we just don't know where that is going. So as we, the city is absolutely committed to taking the boatyard feasibility and assessment all the way until we have a boatyard, or until it's clear that we shouldn't. And what I base that on partially is the city council at their meeting about three or four meetings ago committed an additional $15,000 to do the feasibility study, since we didn't get the $15,000 grant that we needed from the cable commission committee this year. So your city is committed to continuing the boatyard process. As we go through that, I think it might be wise to assess two sites, the Triangle site and another site, so that if we made a breakthrough on the Morro Bay power plant soon, that we might say, hey, there's even a better spot for a boatyard. And we've done a feasibility study on a new wastewater treatment plant at two diverse sites. I'll appreciate your input on this, but we might be able to do the same thing for a conceptual boatyard and say, one in the Triangle lot and one at the back of the tank farm, to assess both of those and to be able to compare those. But we're full speed ahead, or at least boat speed ahead, on going through the process. Now we're at the feasibility study process, or a part of the process for a boatyard. And Eric and I have also looked, and we'll look for your input on this. Is it feasible to do boatyard and some parking all in that Triangle lot area? There's actually a fair amount of space back there. There's also a big building right across the Dynegy side of the fence. If we could peel off another 50 feet worth of Dynegy property, I think that's highly unlikely. But we're sort of looking at all options down there of how could you fit a boatyard in to the Triangle lot area and still retain some parking? Could you do that? And also assess the potential of it in another spot, such as the other side of the Morro Bay power plant, the tank farm.
Right, and the one other thing that we've discussed too, just as you're looking at revenue, one of the things that we've thrown about is, let's start with a boat storage facility, collect some revenue immediately to be able to recoup some of our money. I mean, we don't necessarily have to have a haul out to have a storage. So, that's something to also consider as you're doing your master plan. Okay, where are we going to get revenue? Where are we going to, how are we going to really accomplish these goals? This is another avenue where if we could pencil in a storage, I think we would immediately have some revenue enhancement opportunities here, Dave.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the motion that we made. It was concerning this criteria that we the ad hoc committee came up with for the feasibility, and that it was after looking at all the places for many years, really, but more recently defining this was the most optimal space to use was in that Triangle lot. Some of our big concerns were where the travel lift is and where it travels to, and that was the better spot also. So moving it down the way, we found it other problems environmentally, and the Morro Bay National Estuary Program is part of our ad hoc representative from there is part of our ad hoc committee, and so this was as we went through this criteria, we looked at every issue, and this is where we came up with. And another thing about parking, we brought up yesterday at our meeting, was that area between the wall from the power plant to the street. There's quite a bit of, and some of that is evidently city property. Oh, yeah. It's, yeah. Well, anyways, that might be looked at as a possible diagonal parking. Thank you.
Alan? I believe that we also discovered that it's 2 acres, two and a half in the Triangle lot, and the requirements for the boatyard we're more than that. So as far as having some of them be parking, that didn't seem likely in the final. Is that right, Ron?
Well, if you added up the area, if you consider, and I don't want to denigrate the criteria, but if you consider them as a wish list, if you will, and you add up the area necessary for everything that we had in there, from all the potential users talking to us and what was desirable, it's a larger area, somewhat larger than 2.5. It's more like 3 acres. I'd also like to point out the obvious, which is if we think about the existing parking lot, is the Frankie and Lola's parking lot, if you will, and the Triangle lot and that whole area, there's only one fixed structure in there, and that's the pump station. Nothing else in there is a fixed structure. So there's a lot of potentially underutilized space.
Okay. Any other discussion? Thank you. So I think that the last item on our list tonight that we want to look at is the,
C2,
which is the update from the Capital Improvement Planning Ad Hoc Committee. What we received here from Eric is, like his wish list, as Dave mentioned earlier today, one of the things that we have not been doing is planning for capital improvements over the years. Eric presented us with a budget for this next year in green. If you looked at the... Well, why don't you explain that, Eric?
Yeah, sure, I'll do my
Please.
Staff report. So, as you know, the ad hoc committee, capital ad hoc committee, was formed to help the department work on its capital financing and management and the logistics of slips and piers and schedules and whatnot, and they've done a great job. They've been very helpful. On the financing side, this year, as part of the budgeting process, the city basically had a schedule of capital assets that looked out 5 years, and every year we'd been asked to pencil in what we wanted to spend on a given asset in that year, and that was about it, and it projected out some future year expenditures. But beyond that, it really didn't do any sort of forecasting for replacement and didn't take a super realistic look at some of the different expenditures that we would have to incur over the years to maintain our facilities. So this year, the city manager asked us to really kind of divide things up into a few different categories. On the harbor end with our water facilities, what made the most sense was three schedules. One would be capital replacement, those things that you take out every X number of years and replace because they just flat wear out and go away. Again, as I spoke earlier, piers, they don't really get replaced unless they burn down. So piers are a little different. But our slips and our street end docks and our other things do get replaced. So there's a capital replacement schedule. Then there's a capital major maintenance and repair schedule. I personally would call it capital improvement, but from a financing standpoint, that's not the right word. So it's major maintenance and repairs. That's the second schedule, and that includes our buildings and facilities, when they were built, life in years roughly, and then the columns that show the fiscal years, what we'd plan on spending, and then some notes over in the margins. And then the third list is the capital equipment requirements, and that's both replacement and repairs. Capital equipment being mostly our boats, but also our vehicles and personal watercraft and a few other little odd and end pieces of equipment. So in the past, we kind of had everything on one big list. Now we've parsed it out. What we've really added this year is we took a pretty good look at our capital replacement costs and amortize that over the life of the thing that we're capitalizing, and then put in the and then divide out how much you're going to spend in it X year, and figure out how many years you have left to go, and what do we need to be squirreling away every year. So the method to my madness in this in these schedules are items that are in parentheses are basically what we should be putting away every year and saving, putting in a bucket, towards a final expenditure in a year to be determined down the line. With slips that we built in 1995 that should get replaced about 2025, we should have been putting away X number of dollars for that replacement over those 30 years. We haven't been. So for some of our facilities, like I'll just use an example, our launch ramp slips, the main set of launch ramp slips on the north side of the ramp, if I were to figure out what I need to put away in a bucket every year to replace those slips in 2025, it'd be about $42,000 a year, as opposed to have been a lot less if we would have started putting it away in 1995. So we kind of amortized out what our needs are, and then in the 2015-16 column is what basically we're requesting. Hopefully everybody has it in color. Does everybody have a color sheet? Okay, so what we're requesting, if you look at the 2015-16 column, you can see a number of items there. There's a few items in green on all three different sheets. That's what we are requesting. We've got approximately $585,000 available to spend in our accumulation fund and cash, basically the money that's not going to the operational fund. I've got, if you add up my green items, there's about $610 worth of items that I am asking the city council
$615.
So obviously, there's more asks than money available, so that's what we're asking the council to go forward and make some decisions on what they think is a priority for them to spend. Personally, I think I'm confident we're going to make more revenues than I forecast this year, but until we start seeing those revenues in July, that for this past year, when we start collecting those percent gross revenues, we've got to budget very conservatively, and that's what we've been doing the last few years.
Now, Eric, the only question I have is that the figures that are in black that aren't parenthesized, what does that represent?
A figure in black that's not parenthesized, that would be a lump sum total that we would spend that year. So let's use...
So in other words, you're going to spend like $15,000 for the harbor maintenance storage for this year and $40,000 for the South T Pier? I'm just trying to understand.
Let's take the first capital replacement list.
Okay.
Let's take the harbor office.
Right.
Okay. We've got seven in the 14-15 column, $7,000.
Right.
That was approved in the current budget year for a needs assessment. Basically, what size and shape and color building do we need? 15-16 to start putting some money away.
Right.
We put in $10,000 for 15-16. 16-17. We'd throw $490,000 in a bucket, 17-18, another $500,000, 18-19, spend a total, if you add up all those columns up, with the exception of maybe the 7,000, comes up to $1,000,005. If we've estimated to replace our buildings, about $1,000,005. So over those 3 years, we'd put in $10,000 1 year, $490,000 1 year, $500,000 1 year, gives you $1,500,000.
And then that's why that's not parenthesized.
Correct. So
year.
The okay. Not parenthesized means
gotcha.
That's the year we're spending it.
I understand.
And
that.
That's the total amount.
Okay.
My notes say that, but it's
no,
gets a
I
little
understand
convoluted.
Completely. So this is something that we have never done before. So I again, it's an eye opener. It's a commendable task. And as we've talked, Eric, too, I believe at least what you've requested this year for your capital improvements, we're going to be able to meet that. I mean, the revenues, I think, are going to come way over our projections.
I think so too. We're going to level out. I mean, we're the percent gross revenues are on a pretty steep rise right now, but they're going to level out because that's from the economic recovery. And so until they do level out, we don't really know where our expense versus revenue differential is going to be. But it'll be a positive one. We're past the negative. We're past not having any more Dynegy outfall lease revenues, and we're on the positive side. So that's the good news.
Now, one of the other things, too, that I think we really need to look at and talk about is, all these wish lists, too. A lot of this money can be, I would think, generated by grant writing. So if we actually put some thought and process into some of this, like we were going to do for the fish, the whole boat launch ramp that we did not get the money, but that's something that we're still requesting, and hopefully we're going to get it next year.
Yeah, we're constantly looking for grant opportunities. Yeah. We've re-requested that. There's some of the our street end docks and that are the little three-hour docks. Those we're going to look at some grant funding for those. So yeah, we're always looking at grant opportunities and the Department of Boating and Waterways for funding. So what we're kind of looking at here tonight is and I'll thank again the ad hoc committee. I got a lot of good input on putting this together and helping make some sense out of it and making it readable for everybody. And I think it does a fairly good job. I think what I'm looking for from the Harbor Advisory Board is a look over, flyover of it. Are we on the right track? Is this a good way? Eventually, I'd like to get it out to 10 years and plus, really, which is what we're going to start trying to do with our revenue forecasting so we can look at a longer, bigger picture and then start putting, you know, once we know where our revenues are leveling out at, then we'll be able to really plug this into a bigger tool. Which we do have through Management Partners. They've got a program that they've done for the general fund, and we're fortunately I've got to take all the numbers out of the general funds entered in there in about 4,000 different boxes and put all my numbers in there to make it work for the Harbor Fund. But we'll get there, and then we'll have a good forecasting tool to see, you know, money we're going to get, money we're forecasting, what do we need, and hopefully coming up on the green side and not on the red side.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Is there any comments or any questions for Eric here from the board? Ron?
This is a great start. I like the format. I agree with Eric that it, as quickly as possible, needs to be extended, with the existing numbers. It needs to be extended to 10 years so you can actually see that on a spreadsheet. Also, I would encourage further refinement of the useful life of the line items.
Dana?
No real comment. It looks good.
Thank you. Neil?
Yeah, like Ron said, I think this is a great start. I'm also looking at it just kind of as a bottom line. If you can include some totals at the bottom, that might be the earmarked total of actual expenditures that year, and then a grand total, just to kind of see where it balances.
Yeah, great comment. I'll have to rely on Laurie to do that because I'm not the Excel spreadsheet expert.
Right, and that's so. Just for the fiscal year requirements.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my aspiration, is to learn how to work this program.
We'll teach them. This is a great start.
Yeah, Eric, I think you've done a great job, and I think adding those totals would be helpful too. So thank you. Lynn? Alan?
Were these capital replacement costs included in your cost to provide slips, for instance? These figures?
Yeah, these figures are the figures I am using that I did use for doing all my slip calculations and whatnot. With the slips, you know, it's a per square foot replacement to get those replaced, so it's pretty consistent across the board. So,
okay.
Gene? Thank you. So I think Eric's looking for a motion to state that this is a good start. Oh, we already said that. Okay, so I guess we don't need a motion, Eric.
Yeah, I don't need a motion. It's great that I've got, you know, good comments and some modifications. I did speak to Ron and you, Bill, on some things on
right.
to improve this. So yeah, I'll be refining this as we go.
All right, give us a call. All right, now next on the agenda here, I think we wanted to take a look at. I've lost my thing here. What's our next thing?
Future agenda.
Future agenda items.
I'd like to go back. I'd like to go back to that lease subsidy discussion for a few minutes.
Okay, declaration of future agenda items. Do we need to add anything more, or I think we have our plate full? I'm sorry. Oh.
So in terms of, and I'll just throw out my intent here. We've been deferring the rules and regulations for a while here to
probably
try and get some things
bring
going.
Bring one back.
We'll try and get that back. Again, special meetings, we did that one back last month, which was good to get that out of the way, even though it fell right on the heels of the other one. Boatyard haul out, I don't suspect the ad hoc committee is just going to stop now. I think we're going to keep going, and as I move forward to council, I'll be going back to that committee, and those reports will be coming up. We've got a fair amount here, and it'd be nice to have a little slower month, but we'll keep plugging away, and we got plenty on here, unless there's something really pressing that somebody needs to bring up.
I don't think so. Anyone have anything pressing that they'd like to discuss? Hearing none, I'd like to offer a motion for adjournment. Do I hear a second?
I second.
I have a motion to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you.